we have forgotten a necessary war against people that did attack us. That's my point of view, and that's it for today. This is Mark Levine, signing off.
This is the Quality News Network. The Dow Jones rose sharply today as investors grew more confident the Federal Reserve will lower interest rates next week. We'll have details coming up in our business segment. President Bush is expected to address the nation this week and endorse the recommendations of General David Petraeus and reduce American troops in Iraq by 30,000 by next summer. During the second day of Senate hearings, many rank-and-file Republicans told General David Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker they're uneasy about the lack of political progress in Iraq. Both Petraeus and Crocker acknowledge the Iraqi government remains largely dysfunctional. A somber ceremony at Ground Zero today, marking the sixth anniversary of the terrorist attacks. In all, 2,993 people died when the planes crashed into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Help is on the way for America's ailing bridges. The Senate approved $1 billion to repair and replace bridges across the country. An estimated 78,000 spans are structurally unsound. China agreed today to prohibit the use of lead paint on toys exported to the United States. Chinese officials also pledged to step up inspections and meet U.S. standards. Turkish police on alert because of the 9/11 anniversary discovered a large bomb in a parking lot in Ankara that could have been devastating had it detonated. Thousands were evacuated after sniffer dogs detected the explosives. In Islamabad, Pakistan's Supreme Court today was asked to intervene in yesterday's deportation of former Pakistan Premier Nawaz Sharif. President Pervez Musharraf arrested Sharif as soon as he arrived in Pakistan after 8 years of exile. Sharif announced his candidacy in the up-and-coming Pakistani presidential election. In Veracruz, Mexico, radical guerrillas blew up 4 natural gas pipelines, igniting roaring fires that forced the evacuation of more than 24,000 people. It is the second attack on Mexican pipelines in as many months. Authorities warn natural gas supplies will be reduced 25% until repairs are made. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are coming up next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
A new study shows more than twice the number of reports of debilitating side effects from drug treatment were received in 2005 than 7 years earlier. The number of deaths from pharmaceuticals almost tripled in 2005 compared with 1998. Spinach and eggs may ward off blindness. That's the conclusion of a recent study from the National Eye Institute. The two nutrients found in those foods lend protection against age-related macular degeneration. The cost of health insurance for workers and their employers increased an average of 6% this year. A survey released by the Kaiser Family Foundation said insurance costs are likely to rise again next year. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke said the U.S. and other countries need to work together to fix trade imbalances. Bernanke said the U.S. has a bloated trade deficit, while China and oil-producing countries have a trade surplus. The Commerce Department reported today that the value of U.S. exports of goods and services increased almost 3% in July. Both exports and imports reached record levels, demonstrating strong global demand and higher prices. Light sweet crude oil trading at $78.23 a barrel. And on Wall Street today, the Dow Jones ended up 181 points, the NASDAQ up 33, and the S&P 500 up 20 points. There's more on our website, QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Okay, don't you,
South America.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! That may be as good as it gets tonight. I may get past well howdy, and that may be the end of it. I don't know. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Head On. And, you know, I think I can count on one hand the number of times I've been away from this microphone for being sick. Now, I've been away from the microphone for other reasons. Struck by lightning. I mean, you know, the equipment, things like that. But apparently I have developed something I have never had before in my life. The doc says it's an inner ear infection. And it's, I don't know how to put it, it's like being loaded without the fun of drinking. It's just awful. I hate it. I've been on antibiotics for 6 days now, and it seems like it's getting worse instead of better. You know, just sort of inside my head. What I'm telling you is I'm going to try to get through the show tonight. If I can't, I'll punt, and there will be a rerun. So, you know, just fair warning. But I wanted to get in behind the microphone and try to go if I possibly could. Because, after all, this is September 11th, and we have to remember, well, you know, 3,000 otherwise decent human beings died this day 6 years ago. And their deaths have been used as a bloody rag to wave in front of the eyes of the American people. And I'm just... I got up this morning to come in and start our usual 16-hour day, and just walked past the television, and there were the Twin Towers getting hit, getting hit, getting hit, getting hit, getting hit, getting hit. Over and over and over and over. But, you know, that only went on until General until he started his prattling again. Now, yesterday, by way of, you know, I mentioned the doc, yesterday I was gone because I had an appointment to have some things carved off my hide. That the doc said really didn't need to be there and that I could do without. So I got to sit in the waiting room of the doctor's office for a nice long while and watch Fox News, which rather quickly got changed to Headline News. Shh, don't tell anybody. But I did sit there. Well, you know, watching Fox News is a lot like watching a train wreck happen. You're just captivated by it. You're mesmerized by it. And so I sat there watching as General Petraeus or Petraeus answered questions. You know, there were Republicans throwing softballs, asking if they could come down and do for him what Monica did for Bill. And, you know, it was pretty sickening. But then the ultimate indignity, and it wasn't a mistake because it happened twice. If something happens once and then it goes away, that's a mistake. If it happens twice, not so much. You know, if CNN's like this too. When somebody's speaking live, periodically somebody on a font machine will type in text to tell the morons what the person on the screen is saying. Now, why they assume that a moron can read as opposed to sit there and listen for themselves? No, they've got to be told. So twice in this cycle, this font goes up, this box goes up under the general, and it says, Petraeus, : Al-Qaeda is Iraq. Will prevail if we leave. Al-Qaeda is Iraq, will prevail if we leave. Now, clearly, or not clearly, I don't know, this is kind of like textual, the kind of textual criticism that biblical scholars do, that is Iraq was supposed to be in Iraq. Al-Qaeda in Iraq will prevail if we leave. And it happened once. And I thought, why, this is some 22-year-old intern who can't live without a spell checker. But then I sat there and listened to Petraeus lie and lie and lie and lie. You know, kind of like how he said at the very beginning, these are my words and the White House hasn't seen them. And I wrote it myself. And George didn't help. It was just like the Shake and Bake commercial, and sort of in reverse. And he didn't help. And lo and behold, it rolls around again. Al-Qaeda is Iraq. Will prevail if we leave. And at that point in time, I just said to myself, I'll be diddly. Because when it happens twice, it's not a mistake. When it happens twice, it's intentional. The only other option is to simply say that the people at Fox are so incompetent they can't read what they themselves are typing. Al-Qaeda is Iraq. Al-Qaeda is Iraq. Al-Qaeda is Iraq. Come on, everybody, say it together now, like good little Americans. Al-Qaeda is Iraq. Because it fits together with what the Dear Leader administration has been saying all along. Iraq is the central front in the war on terror. Al-Qaeda is Iraq. Because after all, we had the new video out from Osama bin Forgotten. With the beard and the shoe polish and the streaks are gone and it's nicely trimmed. I didn't know he was allowed to trim his beard. I thought that thing had to start with in fundamentalist, you know, Wahhabi Islam. I thought that, you know, the minute the first little squirrely hairs grew in when a boy was a teenager, you know, no razor for you, bub. But it was nice and it was neatly trimmed and it was dyed jet black. Yeah, it was shoe polish, I know, Agnes. or what was it, I forget who said it. It's a new product that's out, just for jihadis. To take away that embarrassing gray. I feel like a new terrorist now, says Osama bin Laden. Al-Qaeda is Iraq. You got that? Fear is patriotism. Grief is religion. Al-Qaeda is Iraq. So among the other things that we're probably going to try to do tonight, assuming that that I hold up. I mean, I'm sorry, this is just awful. I'm not a terribly sickly person, and when you do, yuck, it's just nasty. Never had anything like this. But when what we'll do, we'll take a look at some other things, because today has been an orgy of 9/11. Oh, wait, I tell you what, talking about looking at other things, I got something for you here. I'll read you something. I know, you hate it when I read to you. Our children came home from school today. They've been practicing a song. They practiced a song in school today. And it's, the name of the song is Little Did She Know She Kissed a Hero. He found some socks. She chose his tie. And when he left for work that morning, he was just another guy going to work. He'd have to fly out to a meeting in L.A. So she had kissed him twice goodbye. Little did she know she'd kissed a hero, though he'd always been one in her eyes. But when faced with certain death, he'd said a prayer and took a breath and led an army of true angels in the sky. Little did she know she'd kissed a hero, though he'd always been an angel in her eyes. Putting others first, it's true, that's what heroes always do. Now he doesn't need a pair of wings to fly. The phone had rung. His voice was calm. Before he could tell her anything, she knew something was wrong. I love you so, the last words he'd said, and she said, I love you too, and then the phone went dead. Little did she know she'd kissed a hero, though he'd always been one in her eyes. But when faced with certain death, he'd said a prayer and took a breath and led an army of true angels in the sky. Little did she know she'd kissed a hero, though he'd always been an angel in her eyes. Putting others first, it's true. That's what heroes always do. Now he doesn't need a pair of wings to fly. I'm reading that from a web page where they're selling the ringtone to that song. Flogging the dead bodies of 3,000 people for $1. Oh, calling Calvin Coolidge. White courtesy phone.
The business of America is business.
Little did she know, she'd kissed a moneymaker. Little did she know, she'd kissed a bank account. Dear God. And they gave the lyric sheet to this thing to my kids in school today. And they're going to stand up and sing it for 911. Welcome to our new national holiday. Don't worry, though, because in 100 years or so, just like Labor Day that was recently passed, a day to mark the struggles of working people to be treated like human beings, a day to remember things like the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory fire or the Haymarket riots, a day of reverence and remembrance. Well, 100 years later, we use it as the last gasp of summer and the last good opportunity to put a few steaks on the grill and maybe get wasted. Right? 100 years from now, that's what September 11th will be. 100 years from now, it won't be any sort of memorial. 100 years from now, it'll be an excuse for a party. Because that's generally what we do with our holidays. 100 years from now, when you go into the drugstore about a month before September 11th, there will be the ornaments you can hang on your door of the Twin Towers or the Pentagon. And, you know, the people at Snickers and M&M's will put out commemorative 9/11 bags of candy. Made, of course, in China. With the lead paint on the M&M's, you know, melts in your brain, not in your hand. Oh, this is all rather sickening. It really, really is. Because I can get in touch, with grief for the victims of that awful day. I can get in touch with grief for the victims of fundamentalist religion and for the victims of gross, willful, wanton, capricious negligence in our government. Why does the Bush administration continue to take credit for protecting us from terrorism when the biggest terrorist attack in our history happened on their watch? And we let them get away with it. We're protecting you from the terrorist. Osama bin Laden will hear our voice this day. We got an old saying in Texas, wanted, dead or alive. Well, I guess, Mr. Bush, what that means is you don't really want him. Because the other thing that they've trotted out, and I'm guilty of it, and I've heard a lot of other liberal talkers talk about it, you know, Osama bin Laden in a cave somewhere. Intelligence experts agree he's not in a cave. He is living free and easy in what is described at the Raw Story site that I saw as a Spartan but comfortable compound somewhere in the tribal lands of Pakistan. Now, I don't know what Spartan means to a crazy-ass Wahhabist like bin Laden. I mean, the guy, no drinky, no gamble, no shave, no bathe. What does Spartan mean in that context? He's apparently got an internet connection. Little Verizon dude over there with the robes on it. Can you hear me now? What a con. What a con. 6 years of a con. 6 years of follow the queen, follow the queen, follow the queen. Where's the queen? Where's the queen? Oh, I'm sorry, that's the six of clubs. You lose again. 6 years of find the pea, find the pea. Come on, the pea's under the cup. The pea's under the cup. All you got to do is follow the cup, follow the cup, follow. Oh, the cup is empty. That's going to cost you. 6 years of being scared out of our wits. 6 years of being terrorized, not by Al-Qaeda. By the way, did I mention Al-Qaeda is Iraq? Not by Al-Qaeda, but by a gang of thugs and money grubbers and looters occupying 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue and their battered wife syndrome spouses in the scared-to-death Congress. I saw an AP headline earlier today. Oh, where is it? Where is it? An AP headline earlier today that said, Republicans sharply question Iraq policy. Associated Press. Well, another there goes another nail in the coffin of the so-called liberal media. Republicans sharply question Iraq policy. The hell does that mean? Well, there's unstated meaning behind that. One of them is that, you know, Democrats don't sharply question Iraq policy. We're just a bunch of sissies. Republicans are true patriots. By the way, Al-Qaeda is Iraq. Might be a tough night. Agnes says we take a break. And we will. And we'll come back to your phone calls. Mark this occasion. What are you feeling 6 years in? 877-443-2366 is the number. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your own nickel, 304-658-5453. This is America's liberal voice. This is the voice that you make happen. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to The Horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
On last night's show, we discovered a double murder-suicide involving three gay men in Orlando. A hate crime? Oh, hell no. Just your average log closet Republican three-way lover's quarrel. The only surprise here is that it didn't happen in a men's room. Strictly Confidential, 9 p.m. Eastern. You got the best love and feeling. All that love and feeling. You got that
love and feeling. Now it's gone. Did you receive an email from the IRS saying you're due a tax refund? If so, don't open it. The IRS does not request personal information by email. Hi, I'm Russell George, Treasury Inspector General for Tax. The IRS and I want to warn you about bogus IRS emails and websites that look real, but are not. These emails are schemes played by crooks who are out to steal your money and identity. Fall victim to it, and you can spend months, even years, cleaning up the mess they've made of your good name and credit record. Help stop these crooks from ripping people off. If you get a suspicious email, forward it to phishing@irs.gov. That's phishing at irs.gov. Or call us at 1-800-366-4484. Again, that's 1-800-366-4484. Thank you. Almost half past the hour. I've made it through almost 30 minutes. Yay me. Yeah, those moving shadows, they make me a little nauseated these days. Okay, so we're going to go straight to the phones in just in a second. Please bear with me because I've got some audio I want to share with you. It's not terribly long. The players in this are Congressman Ike Skelton of Missouri, Congressman Dan Burton of Indiana, who is crazier than a run-over dog, Congressman Dreyer, is it Dreyer? You'll hear the reference. And Congresswoman Ileana Ross Leightman. Everybody except Ike Skelton in this little drama is a Republican. Now, just to do the setup for you a little bit, this has to do with the period of time yesterday in the House of Representatives when General Petraeus found out his... Or Petraeus, why do I keep saying that? Maybe it's because that's what he's doing! Not so much. Well, not you and me so much as he's betraying the troops under his command. He's not fit to serve. He's not fit to lead. But anyway, they were fixing his busted microphone. And this is, I assume this is, and it is, it's before the hearing got properly started. By properly started, of course, I don't mean that they administered the oath to Ambassador Crocker or they administered the oath to General Petraeus. Think, Bob. Petraeus. The name of the centaur in Greek mythology who lost his mind and raped wedding guests. Petraeus. That one. Okay. Anyway, it's before he doesn't administer the oath, because after all, we don't want... You know, he's got a uniform on. Of course he's going to tell the truth. You know that. You know how it is with the military. Honor and dignity and truth and oaths and loyalty and all that groovy stuff. They're just knee-deep in it. I mean, he wouldn't say poopy if he had a mouthful, now would he? Not. Anyway, so Dan Burton, and you remember Dan Burton. He's a congressman from Indiana. Like I said, crazier than a run-over dog. And Dan Burton is the guy who, during the torture and torment of Bill Clinton, because I guess Republicans just generally had this huge penis envy thing going on. I don't mean huge penis. I mean this really, really profound case of penis envy. Although, you know, you could ask Larry Craig and maybe he does have huge penis envy. It's hard to say. Oh, Agnes has Coca-Cola coming out of her nose. But anyway, during the hunting of the Clintons a decade ago, after the tragedy that was the suicide of Dan Foster, of Vince Foster, Dan Burton took a handgun and perhaps a couple of other different weapons out in the backyard and shot watermelons to prove that Hillary Clinton killed Vince Foster. Really? He did that. Like I said, crazier than a run-over dog. And so Dan Burton is having a hissy in this audio clip coming up about the members of Code Pink who are sitting in the hearing room, because the Code Pink people take this stuff seriously and they are going to engage in some civil disobedience. In the video footage, you see one of the first people hauled out is a veteran of the Iraq War by the name of Adam Kokesh. So, this has to do with Congressman Dan Burton, R, crazier than a run-over dog, upbraiding Congressman Ike Skelton. Now, we'll talk about this after it runs, and I may have to have Agnes pause it along the way for screening.
I see a number of people in the audience that I anticipate will be making a disturbance, and if this occurs during the testimony by our honored guest...
Honored guest, not a witness. Time! Feel like a basketball player there by the edge of the boundary and March Madness with the ball and the time. Our honored guest. Is this a society ball? Is this a freaking cotillion? Our honored guest, General Petraeus.
He's a witness. He is a witness testifying before the Congress of the United States. He is not an honored guest. I mean, never mind what you think of the war or his leadership. He's not a guest. They didn't take his hat and coat and bring him a little dab of caviar on a piece of toast. Oh, you're an honored guest. Canape, General. Our honored, and that's Ike Skelton talking. And in a minute, he's a Democrat, and you're going to hear what he thinks of people who are opposed to this filthy, filthy, filthy occupation. Go ahead.
Be very firm and get them out of here.
You don't have to lecture me. They'll be gone.
Well, I still see them out there.
Okay, wait.
We've done this.
Okay, we're going to back up. I got it backwards. The first voice you hear is Dan Burton, crazier than a run-over dog. The second voice is Skelton. So, all the way to the back. Start again.
I see a number of people in the audience that I anticipate will be making a disturbance. And if this occurs during the testimony by our honored guests, I hope that you will be very firm and get them out of here.
You don't have to lecture me. They'll be gone.
Well, I still see them out there.
Don't worry about them. We've done this before. All right. Those that are displaying a sign, out they go. We mean business. This is a very important hearing. We're not about to have this nonsense go on now or later. How would you go on the microphone?
Pause.
What?
Okay, you're going to hear some a colloquy now. They think it's off mic, but it's not. But I want you to take into account what Ike Skelton just referred to these patriotic Americans as. We're not going to put up with this nonsense. We're not going to put up with this foolishness of free speech. Not going to put up with this stupidity of petitioning the government for redress of grievances. We're not going to tolerate Americans acting like free people. If you've got a sign, out you go. Okay.
Swear me. Why do you still believe these people?
Out they go. That really pisses me off, Duncan.
Duncan Hunter.
What the sell me? See, only their goddamn lesson can do.
Yeah, here's their strategy. There's about 10 of them. So what they're going to say, they're going to sacrifice one about every 5 minutes. If they do that, I'd move the whole identifiable group.
How do you do that?
Well, just because they're all in the same, the good thing is they're all in the same grass, the pink people.
Are you getting this association? Now, that is Duncan Hunter talking to Committee Chair Ike Skelton. Did you catch that? There's about 10 of them. And I think they're going to sacrifice one about every 5 minutes. And if they're going to do that, I think I'd just move the whole group out. Well, how do you know who they are? Well, you know, they're all together back there. They're the pink people. Code pink. Code pink. God bless you, Code pink. Most of America, even Americans who are opposed to the occupation, who understand how profoundly wrong the occupation is, they're at home because we got mortgages and credit card debt and car payments, and we can't just go to Washington. But there was Adam Kokesh. There was Medea Benjamin. There was the contingent from Code Pink, and they've got our congressional representatives all up in arms. And Skelton says, I didn't appreciate being lectured by Dan Burton. Okay, let's keep going.
I'd say take the, you can have the people say, take the group out. There's a problem with saying, by that measure.
Okay, can I go to Washington? Yeah. Ross Layton.
What the hell?
I just never
called
you by your
last name. I know.
Illinois
is good.
Strong Illinois.
That's good.
I'm not lecturing you. Well, hell, you didn't. Duncan knows I don't need a. So we recognize Ms. Ross Layton from
Thank
Florida.
You so much, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the a very calm way in which you have conducted this this hearing. And again, I offer my colleagues the opportunity to use this hearing to distance themselves from the despicable ad that was published today calling into question the patriotism of General Petraeus.
Point of order, Mr. Chairman. Nobody has to distance themselves from something they weren't associated with.
Please proceed.
Take it easy. Thank you.
Take it easy. Now, see, she tried that Republican smear garbage where you try to damn people by association with regard to the newspaper ad about General Petraeus, which was 100% factually correct, and tries to get a little political dig at, you know, Democrats, you know, they're cut and run, they're surrender monkeys, and they're questioning the patriotism of General Petraeus. You know what? You want to say, hey, Congresswoman Ross Layton, stupid twit, you want to hear somebody question General Petraeus' patriotism? Hear me now. I question it. I question the patriotism of any commissioned officer in this military who proceeds to go and to do and to participate in the occupation of this poor little country that we attacked for no good reason and on a pretext of lies. I question that patriotism. I question the patriotism of any officer who participates in the ongoing criminal conspiracy that is the overarching war crime against the people of Iraq. I question that patriotism. Let me go a step further. I don't question it. I'm convinced of the lack of patriotism of General Petraeus and any commissioned officer who continues to participate in this occupation. We clear on that, Congresswoman Ross Layton, you sleazy, filthy, blood-covered, damnable Republican, you. Are we clear? I hope so. The only patriots who were in that room were from Code Pink. It damn sure wasn't Ambassador Crocker, and it wasn't General Petraeus, who has made a military career out of being an unmitigated suck-up. He would not be fit to carry the boots of a Ulysses Grant or an Eisenhower or a Lee or a Jackson, because they were not suck-ups. They were men. He wouldn't be fit to polish the boots of McAuliffe at Bastogne, who, when called upon to surrender, answered, "Nuts." There, we clear? Good. Let's go to the phones.
Hi there.
Hey, Susan.
How you doing? Well, I know how you're doing. I'll go you one better.
All right. Or worse.
He's a traitor.
Yeah.
He's a traitor to his oath, and he's a traitor to this country. As is George, Dick Cheney, and the whole shooting match, including any member of Congress who helps them.
Enablers.
Yes. How many people were hung in Nuremberg? Not for fighting a war, for starting one.
Precisely. I believe it was Thomas J. Jackson, Stonewall. Robert Jackson, who had been, he was a Supreme Court justice. He was appointed to the Nuremberg court, and he made it abundantly clear, these people need to know they are not being prosecuted for losing the war. They are being prosecuted for starting it.
Exactly. Now, if you took the entire U.S. government, there are, and went through it, there are very, very few people who would not end up in the modern version of Nuremberg. Feingold is one. Kucinich is one. Well, I got to tell you, Hillary and Obama, hell, they'll end up at the court, too.
Well, lucky for all of them. No, we will never be held to account for this.
We should be.
Oh, and I've just been informed via email, Congresswoman Ileana Ross-Renheitsgebot, or whatever her name is. She's a practicing Scientologist.
Oh, no, that doesn't surprise me in the least. Can I say something offensive?
I'd rather you didn't. But
well, this is offensive only to Bushies.
Is it going to make Agnes take her headphones off and throw them across the room?
Probably not.
Okay.
It's not. There's no swear words involved.
Okay, that'll work.
Okay. I have long been convinced that there is very little between George Bush and Tim Bundy. Think about it.
Well, they're both Republicans.
Yeah. They're both serial killers.
Mm-hmm.
And they both like to dig up their dead and screw them. Bundy actually did it. And Bush does it psychically.
And what's
but
it?
There's very little difference.
And to take it a step further, did you catch that business about the story from the new Bush book that says that he is particularly charmed with Dr. Evil in the Austin Powers movies,
frequently
walks around the White House hallways acting like Dr. Evil, you know, saying things, $1 million.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Ha, ha, ha. He sure is a funny one, that George Bush. He's just like a neighbor. You could sit down and have a beer with him.
Yeah. The biggest difference between him and Bundy is the degree of necrophilia. And I got to tell you, Bush has got Bundy beat all hollow.
Maybe that's the reason we can't see the caskets coming home. Oh, now that's gross. How's that for gross? I think I just outdid you, Susan.
I think you did. And I was trying to be careful. But this whole thing about that that dog. You know what I would do if I had a kid these days?
What's that?
Fortunately, I don't. Both of my, any kid I had would be kept home from school on September 10th at 11th.
Well, maybe we should have done that today. This was just.
Because
Listen, you know, we live here in Bible hell, in fundamentalist Christian hell, and you know, and this is barring. You know, I love this area. I love this region. I love this state.
Uh-huh.
It's the ground that my people have trod upon for nigh 300 years.
Sure. If I had a kid that age, I would look at it and look at said kid, and I'd say, "Okay, you're sick today."
I mean, we were just having a homework conversation in here a minute ago. Agnes may get mad at me for this. I hope not. But it was explained to me, you know, because I'm dad and I'm not real sharp, and sometimes you have to use little short words, and you know, that's how dads are. But it was explained to me that one of the homework papers that was going back tomorrow had to include the statement in this list that was being made of, I love Jesus because he's my Savior, because that's a guaranteed A. And I am fit to be tied right now, I tell you the truth.
Yeah, that's also against the Constitution, but then again, like you said, you live in Bible thumper hell.
Yeah, and I want my child to get the A. Because you know how it is with your permanent record and everything. That'll go on your permanent record.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
does anybody have any idea what the ACLU thinks of this?
Well, it would all just be denied. I mean, it's so subjective that, but you know.
Yeah, that's true.
But you take the test papers and look. Little Tommy said he loves Jesus. He got an A. I didn't say anything about Jesus. I got a B.
Yeah, you know, when you said that they were teaching the kids this on September 11th, I would much rather see the kids being taught. If they're gonna. Personally, I'd rather avoid the whole subject altogether because I don't watch TV at all on this day. But if I were going to be teaching my kids anything, I'd haul out that documentary that was shot by those two French filmmakers who happened to be with a ladder company that day by accident.
Yeah.
And that is the ungodly, unvarnished truth, and it's ugly. And it's traumatizing, but there's no spin involved.
No. That camera doesn't lie. It can't. No, I understand what you're talking about. But like I said, you know, give it 100 years. There'll be barbecues on September 11th.
Oh, I don't give it 100 years. I give it 10.
God, I hope not.
10 years.
If it's 10, we're in worse shape than I thought.
I kind of think we are.
We could be. Susan, thanks a lot.
Yeah, and on that depressing note, I will leave you.
Don't take all.
I hope you get better.
Oh, I do too. This is just awful. This is awful.
Yeah, I know.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye bye.
Bye now. And David, calling from Maine. Hey, David, welcome to the program. Thanks for waiting.
The leaders that stay in the rear get it in the rear.
Well, that's a profound beginning.
Yeah. But that's what I think about everything happening right now. Well, I have a story from West Virginia for you. I don't know if you've heard of it.
I've already got it. Let's wait on this.
Oh, you've heard it already.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And I'm still trying to make sense of it. Got a couple of calls out. I'm going to see if I can maybe get a little background on it. I don't know if I will or not.
Okay, then I have, let me see. There's also one that's on indiebay.org, and it's talking about the loose bays, the loose nukes, and it says, this week that we learned that on August 30th to the United States Air Force flew a B-52 locked and loaded with nuclear warheads. This broke a military policy going back to the 1960s against such flights. I just can't imagine how all this happened, said Philip Coyle, a senior advisor on nuclear weapons at the Center for Defense Information. The procedures are so rigid, this is the last thing that's supposed to happen. But it did happen, and we would not know about it if it had not been for three Air Force officers speaking under condition of anonymity who informed the military time event, and of course everyone is trying to get to the bottom of it. So says the White House, which has lied about everything from 9/11 to Iraq to lead us into a global war for which the neocons were planning well before the presidency of George W. Bush. So says the Air Force, which just violated 4 years of policy without explanation and states that it had no idea the nukes were in the air of the United States for the duration of their flight. So says Congress. These reports are deeply disturbing, said Congressman Ike Skelton, Chairman of the House Armed Service Committee. The American people, our friends and our potential adversaries, must be confident that the highest standards are in place when it comes to our nuclear arsenal. Everybody would be much more confident, I believe, if the Congress, now promising to investigate the loose nukes, were anything but the quislings they have shown themselves to be. But before and after the Democratic election successes of 2006, they have made it apparent that there is really one party in power, the War Party. The Prestige media, to its credit, has not bothered to say that it will do look into, let alone report, about the loose nukes. In other columns, I've explained that they are no longer even lapdogs. They are shameless lap dancers. They sit and squirm at the seat of power, proud to say that they have been embedded, ever willing to keep pulling tricks for treats. So whom are we to trust from among the discredited list of our political, military, and media leaders? If your answer to this question is none of the above, then welcome to the Internet community of conspiracy theorists, like me, who are willing to accept official reassurances that all is well as airborne Armageddon takes flight over America for the length of the Mississippi River.
take a single M16 rifle from the arms room of a stateside military unit requires the permission of several military officials, along with numerous keys, combinations, and codes. It is inconceivable to me and to every other military veteran with whom I have spoken this week that the loose nukes were a mere accident of oversight, or that the order to fly them came from any source other than the White House. The official account of a slip-up parroted by the official media is a transparent lie. The task for thoughtful and patriotic American citizens is to fathom the why behind the lie, and it comes down to a simple question. Was the White House threatening to use the nukes or preparing to use the nukes? Like all bullies, our King George likes to frighten others. The loose nukes may have been intended to bait the Russian bear, whose President Putin has been growing for a year, that neocon America reminds him of Nazi Germany. In response to our predatory Pax Americana, Russian bombers are now overflying foreign territory for the first time since the end of the Cold War. Russian nuclear facilities are ramping up for a new generation of production as their nation prepares to withdraw all from the Intermediate Nuclear Forces Treaty of 1988. And Russian ground forces are now training alongside their Chinese counterparts in preparation for a Central Asian showdown with us. It's ill-advised, though, to suppose that the nuclear warheads flown across America were only a bluff and not intended for use. There are two other sets of Bush opponents for whom the weapons could have been meant as either a demonstration or as an awful action. Iran and Syria, defiant Middle East nations, have been on the Bush target list since before the invasion of Iraq in 2003. Israel is still in an unended war with Syria, and a few days ago sent its jets into Syrian territory where they were fired upon by Syrian forces. As Colonel Larry Wilkerson, former Chief of Staff for Secretary of State Colin Powell, recently pointed out, Israel was pushing for a U.S. attack on Iran instead of Iraq as early as 2002. Washington insiders whispered that the Bush administration had promised an attack on Iran to its supporters in the Israel lobby. AIPAC was instrumental in ensuring that the Democratic Congress did not take measures to repeal Bush's unilateral war-making authority given him by the War Powers Act of 2002. There is still a more dreadful prospect, though. Our unitary executive may be threatening or preparing a strike against the U.S. The unruly and now war-weary American people who are the greatest impediment to the neocon New American Century plan. It used to be that only the 9/11 truth community would entertain the idea that the next 9/11 to be attack would come from our own government. However, a recent spate of Bush administration pronouncements that we are due for such an attack has been made it apparent to many other Americans.
Oh, yeah, remember Michael Chertoff's gut feeling?
Yeah, yeah. That Bush would welcome a 9/11 2B event, or might even arrange one. Six of my last seven columns have examined the prospect that a false flag nuclear attack may be in our near future, and this week's loose nuke story has not done anything to undermine my thesis. It's fine to wish that our own government were not such a threat to us, but anyone who thinks the in our skies are not a threat to us is only engaging in wishful thinking.
Well, I don't necessarily believe that you have to be a conspiracy theorist or buy into my hop, lie hop, ho hop, bee hop, you know, bebop-a-lula to see what a nightmare this was. I mean, what the author says is very true. You cannot get those things into the air through 40 years of military protocol without a whole lot of different things happening first.
I don't call them conspiracy theorists. I would label people as rational theorists and an irrational theorist.
Well, okay, that's good.
And I think they're on the rational side in a lot of different ways. I mean,
look, the starting point is that we flew five or six different stories. I can't nail that down. But we flew five or six active nuclear devices yielding anywhere from 5 to 115, was it, kilotons from North Dakota to Louisiana. Those are facts. There's no theorizing or conjecture that has to take place there, David.
You know what's a bad sign is when Helen Thomas asked this question, and she got Tony Snow didn't know how to respond. He was stumped. He had no smarmy answer or anything, because there is no answer you can give them. It was stupid, and it should be investigated, and you should see the signatures, who signed off on it. And again, we're not able to see that. Now, hopping over to what General Petraeus, I have a new name for him, by the way.
Yes?
I call him General Rock Me Amadeus. We got to pay homage to Falco. Come on.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, so that's what I call him now. He's no longer Petraeus or Petraeus.
And Falco, he was an Australian, wasn't he? Oh, I'm sorry, Austrian.
So, yes.
George Bush gets me so confused.
Okay. Ellen Ratner of the talk radio, she tipped off some people on the Tom Hartman show, and I think you'll like this tip, what you gave. General Petraeus' people gave out maps to everyone in that room of attacks and threat areas for terror, and they had errors. They had arrows. Or I guess you could call them errors, too. they had arrows pointing to specific target sites, like Iran. Credible threat. And guess the only place. The only place on the map. They didn't even have any arrows on.
Where?
Saudi Arabia. What does that tell you? And she said all of these people were stumped. They were like, I can't believe this. Russ Feingold said 50%. He even said it. 50% of the people across the board from the Saudi Arabian border are from Saudi Arabia.
Oh yeah, the little bit of the testimony. No, it wasn't testimony because he was an honored guest and he wasn't under oath. The little bit of shameless cheerleading that I saw Petraeus doing yesterday. One of the things he said is, you know, we've got all these foreign fighters entering through Syria.
That was a pep rally.
Yeah, well, and so what's going on in my head is, you know, I've got my little, you know, I'm geographically literate to a large extent. And so I immediately flashed to my little Middle Eastern map, and there's Saudi Arabia, and you know, a little bit of Jordan comes down there to the Gulf of Aqaba, and a little bit of Israel comes down to the Gulf of Aqaba, and above Jordan there's Syria, and Syria comes over, and there's a big-ass border with Iraq, and all the foreign fighters are coming through Syria. I guess even the Saudis and the Iranians are coming through Syria. It was astonishing to hear it, and to see the Congress critters just sitting there going,
maps had not even one arrow, Bob. Not one arrow on the place. It's such the elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about.
Sure. I mean, we've been, if you want to buy into the theme of 9/11, we have been under attack by the Saudi Arabians since September the 11th, 2001.
That's right.
Osama is a Saudi. 15 or 17 of the 19 hijackers were Saudis. The Saudis are crossing the border into Iraq to arm the Sunnis against the Shia. The Iranians are arguably arming the Shia against the Sunnis. And we're standing in the middle going, stop.
It's amazing how so many conservatives or pseudo-conservatives say, yeah, but, no, there is no but. 17, you jackasses, 17.
From the kingdom.
Know, I mean, again, the only one, I saw that clip of Feingold. I was impressed by that, but again, I mean, when I look at that, I'm like, words are words to me. They're nothing to me now. Especially the times that we're living in now. I'm not going to go the post-9/11 route. I'm going to go the route where people have control of so many weapons and defense weaponry to potentially use on us. I think that's a...
Right. Now back up and remember that within the last month or so, we have inked a deal to sell another $30 billion or so worth of arms to who? Saudi Arabia.
I look at stuff and I just think... Again, this must be engineered why we can't have this conversation, and it must be engineered why they keep saying, I really think that that's their ace in the deck. I don't want to think that they're going to nuke a city, but if there's nothing else left to do, they're going to pull that ace.
Well,
I don't know if they'll be as bold to nuke a city. Maybe a chemical attack? I don't know.
I mean, if one of those things had gone off somewhere between Minot, North Dakota, and Barksdale Air Force Base in Louisiana... How much American territory would have been rendered unfit for human habitation? One. The answer is a lot.
Yeah, a lot. I don't think. Well, we don't know because those bombs are considerably more potent than anything we've ever witnessed.
And see, the problem is if we ask questions about this, instead of focusing like we're supposed to on the Petraeus guest appearance before Congress, then the Bush administration has to go to all the trouble of saying, well, that's national security.
You know, Bob, as controversial as this seems, I wish those people would take their names out and not go under anonymity and go right to the press and say what they were thinking. But I can understand why they don't do it. They don't want to get their family.
They're afraid.
Under threatened.
Never mind their family. Never mind their family. They don't want to get their paycheck threatened.
Yeah, their paycheck too.
And that's,
someone's going to have to do it. Someone's going to have to end the anonymous reign. Anonymous source, I mean, with something like this, and I hope a lot of more people get the courage when they see the people who are supporting them on the net, at least. You can't see them, of course, on the TV or the radio or anything like that because it's pretty much a dead story, but which I can't imagine if this was 1974, Walter Cronkite and company, they would just let this story die.
A real journalist, an Edward R. Murrow, somebody like that? Nope.
Yep, there's something scary about it. And on that note, I'm just going to say, call him General Rockne Amadeus.
You know, I bet, I think we do.
Okay.
Agnes was saying, I wish we had that sign. I think we do. Well, David, I thank you.
All right, Bob.
You have yourself a good evening.
You too.
Bye now.
Later.
Okay, so we're past an hour. We're going to go to the news in a second. And I'll try to do hour. Let's go for hour number two. What do you say? You know the phone number, 877-443-2366. 877, the numeral 4, head on. Or on your own hook if you've got one of those unlimited long-distance plans, which are really cool, 304-658-5453. Email comes in to bob@headonradio.com. See, what I'm doing here is called vamping. I'm killing time while Agnes is looking for Rockne Amadeus, and she didn't find it. I'll take a peep during the break. Stick around.
Well, she seemed all right.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Yeah,
it's the medication. I'm Bob Kincaid.
He wasn't drinking again. Daddy left the poop on her cheek. I was only 8 years old that summer, and I always seemed to be in the way. So I took myself down to the fair in town on Independence.
This is for you, Sean Hannity Job.
Well, word gets around in a small, small town. They said he was a dangerous man. But Mama was proud and she stood her ground. She knew she was on the losing end. Some folks whisper, some folks talk, but everybody looked the other way. When time ran out, there was no
This is a Quality News Network. President Bush is expected to address the nation this week and endorse the recommendations of General David Petraeus by reducing American troops in Iraq by 30,000. The Associated Press reports the president is preparing a speech announcing the reduction will take place by next summer. During the second day of Senate hearings, many rank-and-file Republicans told General David Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker they're uneasy about the lack of political progress in Iraq. Both Petraeus and Crocker acknowledge the Iraqi government remains largely dysfunctional. Despite yesterday's optimistic report to Congress by General Petraeus, the latest AP Ipsos poll says the majority of Americans hold a more pessimistic view. 59% of those surveyed say history will judge the Iraq war a failure. A Senate panel has voted to back a pay raise for military personnel in an amount even greater than the president recommended. The panel, however, trimmed spending for some weapons programs. A somber ceremony at Ground Zero marked today the sixth anniversary of the terrorist attacks. In all, 2,993 people died when planes crashed into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon and in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. In Ankara, Turkish police on alert because of the 9/11 anniversary discovered a large bomb in a parking lot that could have been devastating had it detonated. Thousands were evacuated after sniffer dogs detected the explosives. The Israeli Air Force attacked Hamas targets in the Gaza Strip today, and the government is meeting to decide what other actions to take against the Palestinian militants. That following a Hamas rocket attack early this morning on an Israeli military base, which wounded at least 70 soldiers while they slept. In Islamabad, Pakistan's Supreme Court today was asked to intervene in yesterday's deportation of former Pakistani Premier Nawaz Sharif. President Pervez Musharraf arrested Sharif as soon as he arrived in Pakistan after 8 years of exile. Sharif announced his candidacy in the upcoming Pakistani presidential election. In Veracruz, Mexico, suspected radical guerrillas blew up four natural gas pipelines, igniting roaring fires that forced the evacuation of more than 24,000 people. It's the second attack on Mexican pipelines in as many months. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have science and business news coming up next.
Living our lives in a civil fashion is a declaration of intent. It says we are ready to put our better selves forward for the well-being of the community. It's like romance. When you fall in love, you are on your best behavior. The delight in making a loving connection with someone brings out the best in us, naturally. It is natural to acknowledge our fellow human beings with a nod of the head or a smile, to show them the respect we would want them to show us. The more we are civil with strangers and with those who already know us, the healthier a spirit we create for ourselves, for each other, and the surrounding community. George Washington, the founder of a great nation, declared, "Every action done in company ought to be with some sign of respect to those that are present." Civility is essential to community health. For more information, click on the Civility button on our website, qualitynewsnetwork.com.
A new study shows that dangerous side effects and deaths from commonly used medicines nearly tripled in 1998 to 2005. The authors of the report say the sharp increase in injury and death shows the current FDA oversight system is not adequately protecting patients. The diabetes pill Actos appears to lower patients' chances of death, heart attack, or stroke, but does increase the risk of non-fatal heart failure, as did the popular drug Avendia. Now some diabetes experts say older drugs, such as metformin, should be the first-choice treatments. The older drugs are also often 10 times cheaper than the newer pills. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke said the U.S. and other countries need to work together to fix trade imbalances. OPEC's decision to boost its oil output by 500,000 barrels a day did little to change analysts' predictions for a tightening market. Investors expect a government report to show tight supplies, even factoring in the increase. Experts say investors are also hanging on to the belief that the Fed Chairman Ben Bernanke will cut interest rates at next week's central bank meeting. Light sweet crude is currently trading at $78.23 a barrel. Gold is at $721.10 an ounce. That's up $8.90. The Dow closed up 180 points at 13,307. And there's more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Laurel Crisson.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Thirteen and a half past the hour. I think I'm going to get through okay. I love this. I love this opportunity every night, and I don't like the prospect of not, you know, getting to the end of the game. Leave nothing on the field. That's the, you know, and that's not just me. That's Joe Vecchio, that's John Fox, it's Dr. Bill, Mark Levine, Guy James, Peter Godbold. all the people who work the blogs, the news ninjas, there is not a soul who doesn't, at some time or another, with relation to this operation, who doesn't at some time or another go the extra mile. And if they can, by God, I can. At least that's the way I see it. Which reminds me, this is September. It is September 11th, which is 4 days away from the middle of September. And as far as the September fundraising drive is concerned, I should tell you we haven't cracked $100 yet. So we are a little more than $1,900 away from reaching our monthly goal. And it's not a goal. It's what it takes to pay the bills. So, you know, that's just a reminder. But we have, I should mention, had a couple of folks sign on for the subscription service that's there at headonradionetwork.com. The subscription buttons, rock, paper, scissors, and hammer. We've got a few rocks. We've got one scissors. We have yet to find a hammer. Because if I had a hammer, I'd hammer in the morning. I'd hammer in the evening. All over this land. But anyway, that's where that stands. A little over $1,900 to go for the month. So please bear that in mind. That's all I can say. Let's go to the phones. Albert is calling from Wisconsin. I always have great fun in our conversations. Hey, Albert, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob. How are you?
I'm okay. How about you?
I think you and I are in the same boat. Just this change here comes, so it's soup time. But real quick, just to get the business, I wanted to, you know, over the weekend, I don't know, I think we lost somebody. And maybe he was lost before, but I just from watching him grow Ari Fleischer and Simple Scotty and everyone else, I kind of thought David Gregory was a sane human being.
I've had my doubts about him for a while, Albert.
Yeah.
I mean, getting up there at the Washington Correspondents' Dinner and doing the MC Rove with Carl.
Yeah, that was my first kind of hint, I guess you'd say, and then... when he was on with what's his name, Chris Matthews, who is just despicable. Yeah, he talked about how, you know, the Bush legacy will be, you know, he'll be fine. He'll be looked at as an above average president, and so on and so forth. So I guess we all know where he stands in regards to this.
But what? Wait, Albert. What does that say for the? What was that? In 50 years or 100 years? That was the hypothetical that Chris Matthews asked. What does that say for what David Gregory thinks of the coming crop of presidents? Sorry, inner ear infections will make you think like that.
No, that's well, yeah, that's scary, Bob.
Yeah, it's the only way George Bush comes out being an above average president is if every president for the next 100 years, and at 4 years a term, that's 25 presidents, or at 8 years, you know, with incumbency, that's 12 and a half presidents. Every president for the next 100 years, the next 12 to 25 presidents have to be worse than George Bush. Tell me that doesn't sober you up.
And he's been the worst so far.
Yeah, it's like Bart Kopp says, worst president ever. I think that's the coolest political T-shirt out there, but yeah, that's just me.
It's unbelievable. So, and we obviously see that Petraeus said what he was told to say. And, you know, using things like, oh, in the last few weeks it's been, you know, we've had the least amount of attacks, you know. And
but that's only after we dummy up the numbers and say that our calculation our calculation method is a matter of national security.
Oh, well, I think it's who got shot in the face or who got shot in the back of the head. Things like, you know, which body part they got shot in is what counts. Honey, please don't do that.
Okay, I won't.
No. Come on, why
love
do you
love you
that?
Too, yeah.
Dangerous things. Stop. Anyhow,
parenting is such a challenge.
It's hardest job in the world, I'll tell you right now. because we all know being a general, being able to just rubber stamp whatever, you know, you're told to say and paid to say, because, you know, one day he's going to have a nice cushy job at a think tank or Fox News or something like that. You know that's happening.
Well, but, I mean, this guy actually said, under questioning, he was asked, does the Iraq policy make us safer? You know what his answer was? He said, I don't know.
Oh, did he?
I mean, to that extent, you know, the answer is no. But, again, he couldn't quite bring himself to just sit there and lie like a rug and say yes. So, and that goes all the way back to basic training days when somebody's screaming in your face, if I understand correctly, that there are three answers in the military: yes, no, and I don't know.
Oh, you can't say I don't know.
Oh, so no I don't knows?
No, I don't know.
Oh, no excuses. No excuses. Right.
Yeah, no.
I'm sorry. I'm getting my movies mixed up.
That's all right.
But no, he said I don't know. Now, we are we're fighting them over there, so we won't have to fight them over here, right?
Yeah.
Well, if that's the case, then the answer is yes. But if George Bush is crazier than a sprayed roach, the answer is no. So, you know, there's General Petraeus stuck with, I don't know.
Well, I mean, even from their own Pentagon reports of who is in Iraq, I mean, and it's kind of been this way. I really haven't heard of much of a change, and I definitely would have caught it if I would have heard a change. But, you know, the amount of foreign fighters in this conflict is minimal, and the amount of actual, you know, the guys who are the Al Qaeda, they're minimal. You know, they sit here and they trump up saying, oh well, you know, the now all the Sikhs and all the mullahs are now Al Qaeda for us. There's only 10 guys there, you know, and it's like, well, all right, yeah, we'll do that. You give us some support, and, and you know what happens. I mean, come on. You know, the minute they do that, you think they're going to give the weapons back? They're not going to give the weapons back. They're going to use them against us.
Well, of course.
It's the same thing like when we were training the Iraqi army. I mean, these guys, yeah, the Iraqi army is going to stand up. Yeah, they stand up at night and plant IEDs, and then, you know, in the morning.
Look, I mean, it's one of those things. The story popped at a time when there wasn't really much I could do about it, Albert, but this story about the Czechoslovakian body armor, did you see this thing?
No, what happened?
Some dead insurgents, so-called, or whatever you care to call them, Al-Qaeda, some dead people who were busy fighting our people, okay,
yeah,
were, you know, when their bodies were recovered, they were wearing Czechoslovakian body armor.
Nice.
All right. No, it gets better, okay? Because the Czechoslovakian body armor, because immediately, was there the Czechs selling to Al-Qaeda? Yeah. No, the Czechs were selling to the Iraqi police. And so here are these insurgent fighters who are nicely equipped with high-quality Czech body armor that was bought with American money for the Iraqi police force and promptly transferred to whoever the hell they are. Meanwhile, those 192,000 AK-47s that we lost, what a guess?
Yeah, right. We lost them.
Oh, no, I can't find them. It's right here a minute ago.
Yeah. Come on. We've talked about it before. The same people that lose $2 trillion. So, I mean, you know, it's not much of a shocker there that they can lose that amount of weapons.
And, you know, we've waited for 2 days with Petraeus now, Albert, because everybody said sooner or later somebody's going to say we need another Freedman unit. And so, you know, because a Freedman unit is 6 months.
Yeah.
Because it's named for Thomas Friedman, and all along, you know, another 6 months. We're turning the corner. Another 6 months. Another 6 months. Well, there it was today. He needs another 6 months. Petraeus said it. I want six more months.
But this is the thing that I just find, you know, just so disingenuous about the entire situation. And this, and the Democrats, they say this stuff too. And it drives me nuts because we're not going anywhere. We're not leaving. We are going to stay there. We have to stay there. And this is, please, if I'm really, really wrong about this, show me I'm wrong and I'll shut up about it. But what Let me ask you a question. Are the motivations for us staying there, okay, all of them, okay, not for the democracy in Iraq, but you know the motivations I'm talking about. Are those motivations stronger than any type of resistance for us to leave?
I'm hard-pressed, Albert, because I can't fully, you say I know the motivations. I don't anymore. I mean, this is a Lewis Carroll occupation at this point. This is down the rabbit hole. I mean, this is fighting for the Red Queen, okay? It makes no sense whatsoever. The entirety of the Iraq occupation is officially the Mad Hatter's Tea Party now.
Well, all right, but hang on.
Okay, I mean, I'm working with you here, but I mean,
the first things we did in Iraq:
disband the army,
secure the oil.
Yeah, secure the oil, disband the army.
Did we secure the base that had, 750 million tons of high-grade explosives?
No. No, that would be no.
In the museums, you know that. You definitely know that answer.
Yeah.
I mean, all that stuff, did we, rebuild their water infrastructure, their power infrastructure, and all the things that these people need, just to survive in a climate that gets to 130 degrees? Throughout the months of June and July and August, which is when we see, and you've said, you made the point earlier. I mean, who in their right mind is going to, sit around and, plant bombs and when it's 140 degrees out or 130 degrees out when, you can just sit around and wait. And that, they talk about this whole troop, the troops there, we can take some out.
Well, no. See, I saw that headline today too, Albert. Bush to accede to demand to reduce by 30,000 troops. Who buys that? I mean, what is the IQ level of the American who reads a headline like that and believes it? Okay.
Well, chocolate rations. That's how I look at that. Every time I hear that, I think of chocolate rations going up. It's chocolate rations going up. It's They said that they were going to have to do this anyway due to tour. You're just like,
right, we don't have the manpower to keep this level up. 30,000 have to come home.
Yes.
So, 30,000 have to come home, and we're expected to believe that somebody's gone and strong-armed George Bush into letting 30,000 troops go? No.
But that's wrestling. Wrestling. We've been saying this for years. This is wrestling. I mean, this is nothing. They ain't doing anything, shocking. I mean, this is exactly what we knew they were going to do.
Yeah, this is the guy in the blue tights.
Well, they've been saying it. They've been saying it for months now. I mean, Bush has been running around saying it's working. It's working. To one of our secret bases or one of our secluded bases in the middle of the desert. He walks around with no body armor on his surprise visit, his photo op visit. And, it acts like, oh, see, everything's better. You guys are doing a good job. Hey, hey, hey. You might be here for a little longer. But, our troops are going to be there, Bob, for the foreseeable future. My grandchildren may very well be drafted and sent to Iraq. I mean, that's how I feel about it. That's how I'm looking at it. I mean, this is some of the last energy resources we have in the world. I mean, and if you look at how we are, the way we are in terms of controlling resources, or just our, look at what we did to Central America for bananas, for God's sakes. This is just for bananas. What do you think we're going to do?
Hey, we're trading nuclear fuel that can be used to build more bombs for mangoes. What the hell else do you want? I mean,
mangoes are delicious.
They are. With a little bit of yogurt and some sugar and a little bit of skim milk and a blender with ice, you can't beat it in the morning. Rather than sit around, and I want to share something with you, if you don't mind.
All right.
Rather than sitting around listening to General Petraeus prattling on, I think we might have been far better off listening to Sergeant Thomas Strickland of Douglasville, Georgia.
Yes.
He said on his blog, which he called One Foot in the Grave, he asked what the chain of command had been doing since his first tour. This is a quote. "We were winning somewhat when I left, and now we're being pinned down in our own bleep homes. Insurgents are pushing locals out of their homes and taking over my area at will." He said this 2 days before he was drowned in a vehicle accident at Mamadija.
Really?
Then there was Another soldier who wrote, President Eisenhower warned of the growing military-industrial complex in his farewell address. Since Dick Cheney can now afford solid gold oil derricks, it's safe to say we failed Ike miserably. After losing two friends and over a dozen comrades, I have this to say. Do not wage war unless it is absolutely, positively the last-ditch effort for survival. This was Specialist Alex Horton. This is a 22-year-old, okay? He said, in the future, I want my children to grow up with the belief that what I did here was wrong in a society that doesn't deem that idea unpatriotic. Now, there was a lot said by General Petraeus over the last couple of days, ongoing, blah, 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 and it's all BS, okay? But you know what? That's truth.
Oh, it is. That's certain. Who doesn't want that? That's,
you know, the guys going out riding around in the Hummers and the Stryker vehicles, the guys who are sitting there and see paper bags on the side of the road and slow down and speed up and wonder if it's a damn bomb, those guys have a pretty good idea of whether we're winning or losing.
And this is my whole deal in terms of this is just got to, you know, just because of people, maybe they don't understand it, but this insurgency, okay, this is a guerrilla conflict. It's probably one of the hardest things to get a foothold on, because one of the things about guerrilla insurgency is to constantly keep your enemy off guard. Right? You have to keep them off balance. And what's one of the best ways to do that? Throttle up. You know, throttle up, all of a sudden, boom, 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 in a couple months, they're doing nothing, and they're all stressed out, and everybody's, you know, it's everybody's going, gung-ho, and they're going, and they're going, then they disappear. But they're still looking. We're still looking for these guys. We're constantly stressed out, and we get fatigued, and we keep getting fatigued. And then all of a sudden, once the lull comes back, you know, and everybody gets kind of comfortable, boom, you hit them again. And that's how you have to do these kinds of, and this is what they're doing.
How much more of it can the American people and the American military take, Albert?
That's why we talk about Iran, and we say, well, what's it going to take for us to attack Iran? You know as well as I do that I don't know, but I will say that I really don't think Bush has the political capital to just go out and bomb Iran. Okay, I really don't think he has that. So it's when people talking about it, all it makes me do is cringe and cry, because I don't know what is it going to take for the American people and the world to sit there and be okay with it, because there has to be something to enable an excuse for us to do this. We can't just go and do this, and we need an excuse in order to.
We went and just did Iraq.
Yeah, but we still had the whole allure. I mean, you know, 60% of the Americans, we thought that Saddam had something to do with 9/11. 80% of the troops thought that.
That's,
you know,
okay. Probably in excess of 90% of America. Okay, let's work with some percentages here, Albert. 90% of America. Back up. 80% of America identifies themselves as believing in some sort of God, religion, yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
80%. 90% of America, I would say, or in excess of that, believes that Mahmoud Ahmadinejad said that Israel must be wiped off the map. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Mahmoud Ahmadinejad didn't say that. It's like saying that Saddam had something to do with 9/11. Okay?
Yep.
We know the truth. A whole bunch of Americans didn't. Well, they also don't know that Mahmoud Ahmadinejad has not said that Israel should be wiped off the map. Okay? One, the idiom doesn't exist in Persian, Farsi. Okay? Wiped off the map. Doesn't exist. Two, what he was talking about, he was quoting someone else. We're not allowed to know that, but you can find that out if you dig around enough. Okay? So there it is. All we need is a little bit more saber rattling toward Israel.
Well, and I understand that.
And then you tell the American people that Jesus wants Iran bombed. And maybe you tell the hardcore Orthodox Jewish community it'll make the Messiah come back. And it won't be Jesus. It'll be a totally new guy.
Yeah. Well, I kind of actually, I actually listened to quite a few pretty hardcore Orthodox rabbis, and there's a substantial population of them that don't even believe that Israel is a viable state. They've been against it since 1930s and stuff like that. So there is that whole group as well, and most people aren't aware of that. They think, you know, it's the whole deal, but that's, you know, that gets into Zionism and what it actually means in relation to the Torah, but and which is a whole can of worms we probably don't want to go into. But and I definitely hear what you're saying when you talk about, you know, yeah, people are misled. I mean, you know, most Americans can't find Iran on a map, and you know, if you labeled Australia Iran, they would think, oh, that's Iran, you know, and they would point to that, as a couple of comedy shows have done. But really, though, I mean, you got to look. You know, remember back when the British patrol boat, you know, they almost had that. They almost had it, but the British patrol boat was definitely out of bounds when it came to where they were and where they got, you know,
right,
picked up from. You know, so that didn't quite do it, and. So it's going to take something. It's going to take, you know, it's like, you know, they've been, oh, man, the Bush administration, all these scum have been talking about, oh, the Iranians are making IEDs, such and such and such, when our special forces and the British special forces come by and they tell us that there is none of this weapons transfer across borders. So, but like, we're expected to also forget about, as I mentioned earlier, the 758 million tons of the high-grade explosives, which is what all these IEDs are made of. Remember, they all walked out, you know, 3 days after Saddam was, you know, overthrown.
Yeah.
All these munitions just simply walked away from this base that we had no. Oh, we just drove by. We didn't even care about what was in there.
What's in there, by the way? I think it's canned hams.
Yeah, but we were really looking for those weapons of mass destruction too, weren't we? We just drive past this giant munitions depot. Don't even go in there and check it out or anything. Which, I mean, and, you know, and it is constant mistake after constant mistake. And you know, I am at this point where I don't know if the mistakes are intentional or just mistakes. You know, at the same time, it's kind of tough to sit there. I mean,
well, intentional or a product of negligence, the outcome is still the same.
The outcome is still the same, and that's why you sit there and you go, well, what do they want? And what they want is for us to be there, which is why, you know, this is why we have mercenaries that we're paying to go over there and just shoot at random. You don't think that
shoot at people. Sorry.
Yeah, they're shooting at Iraqis. They're shooting at, you know, I mean, then they put it on the net. Wait, we forget about this? Do we forget that those two British troops that got caught with all the bomb-making materials dressed up as Iraqis? They had wigs and everything. Did we forget that they got caught and arrested? I think it was even in Fallujah. I mean, did we forget this, that they were British? I mean, we have all these mercenary guys, these guys that will go and kill for money, and you know, Bob, right now, $60,000 a month is a lot of money, isn't it, Bob?
A little bit.
Yeah, I mean, and there are some people that once you get to that point of depravity, there isn't much that you wouldn't do. And so we all know about these death squads. We know all about the zip ties around there and then, you know, execution-style murders. We know this kind of stuff, and this kind of stuff happens, and, you know, we say, oh, it's Al-Qaeda, but you know, this is the kind of stuff where you don't know who it is. You have no idea who it is. This is a war zone that, you know, all of a sudden 80 bodies turn up, 10, 20 bodies, 50 bodies. I mean, these kinds of things just happen. On top of us declaring a free fire zone with our conventional troops and, you know, laying waste 25 civilians and so on and so forth, which all that does, what does that do? You know what that does. You know what it would do if they did that to you and your family or your friends and your neighbors. That would make you pick up an AK and IED training, and you'd start going and doing it too. So this is the kind of stuff that they're just fueling the fire for themselves. Bob, you know for a fact.
It's self-perpetuating.
It is self-perpetuating, and that's the point.
And that's the design.
Exactly. It's designed chaos. It's designed for us to be there the way we are there. And it's going to be, I don't care, I mean, this is just me, but as, you know, we talked about Ike, right? Right? The troop said we failed Ike in his warning about the military-industrial complex. That's who pulls the strings. That's who gets what, that's who, you know, that's why the Republicans, this, you know, national security mythos about them is that, you know, is because really when they come on, they just, you know, open the floodgates for the funding for the military-industrial complex. So they get the, as Chomsky states, the A-team. You know, so they're the favorite. But I really don't believe that it's going to be any different if... It's really not going to be any different if Hillary gets in. She knows that, and everybody knows that. I think everybody should know that deep down in their heart, that they know it's true, that we're not going anywhere. We don't build 14 giant bases, okay?
Albert, you want to sit and talk... You want to talk a little military theory real quick?
Yeah, sure.
The fact of the matter is, the trap that I fear tremendously is the same trap that LBJ fell into.
Yeah.
And that is where you've got certain military minds who come out and say, you know, what we need to do is we need to put a 500,000 people there. And if we put a 500,000 men in, we can get the job done. And we're not talking about the specialists and staff sergeants and, you know, platoon leaders and stuff getting the president's ear. We're talking about a guy who's got some jewelry on his shoulder boards, and like a president wants to make a legacy. He wants to be, you know, everybody in Bush War One. Everybody thought Storman Norman Schwarzkopf was just a genius.
Yep.
When all he did was use the same calculus that Ulysses Grant used, okay? You know, I'm going to have more people and more bullets than they got.
Overwhelming firepower.
Right. And you know, it's the Powell Doctrine. Okay, sure, whatever. I'm terrified that one of these sort of pseudo-hawkish Democrats, whether it's Hillary or Barack, you know, or these people who will not commit to the idea of what we're doing is wrong and what we're doing has to end, that some three-star, four-star wannabe will come out and say, you know, I've got the plan. What we need is 1 million men in Iraq. You know, Shinseki said it, and he got cashiered for it. But he was right, wasn't he? Well, let's finish this job, and let's humiliate George Bush. Let's do it right this time. I can see it as plain as day, and then, you know, and then you get the speech about, well, you know, George Bush never asked America to sacrifice for this war. Well, we want this war to end, and the only way to end this war is to finish this war, and the way to finish this war is to bring in a draft.
Uh-huh.
And we will have 1 million men in Iraq, and Al-Qaeda won't be able to go to the bathroom without us blowing their brains all over the wall. And the reason I bring this up, Albert, is because I saw a line of questioning from a guy that I presume was a Democrat from New York. I couldn't see because the font was over top saying, you know, Al-Qaeda is Iraq.
Yeah.
But he said, he looked at Petraeus and he said, how can we be safe until we have killed every last terrorist in Iraq? How can you tell me that there is a stated point in time where we can leave Iraq if, as you say, we're still going to have terrorists there? Shouldn't your mission, General, be to kill every last terrorist in Iraq if we're going to fight them there so we don't have to fight them here? If we leave any there, they can follow us home, can't they, General? And he, you know, his little eyes, those beady little eyes opened up, and he, you know, that Herman Munster, the Herman Munster haircut that he's got, kind of went up and down on his forehead, and he, for a few seconds there, he looked like a deer in the headlights, and you could see that, you could just see the wheels turning because the smoke was coming out of his ears, and something inside him was going, yeah, I would like to have 1 million men. Ooh, that could be cool. We got to stay till we've killed all the terrorists. We can, and the way my tiny little mind works is the next thing is I hear that clip from George C. Scott in Patton saying, "War, God help me, I do love it so."
Yeah.
Because generals do love war. Generals don't die.
Yeah, that would be something if they had to actually go out there, wouldn't it?
Well, but I mean, do you see what I'm saying? I can see.
Yeah, no, I certainly see what you're saying.
I can see an escalation theory, and I can see a Democrat being seduced by it.
Oh yeah, oh yeah. But I just kind of want to I like that theory a lot. That makes a lot of sense. My only thing that I just gotta, you know, keep saying is why we're there in the first place. I mean, we're not there for Al-Qaeda. That's just nonsense. I mean,
Al-Qaeda in Iraq wasn't even chartered, or, you know, they didn't get their charter or their secret decoder ring or their certificate suitable for framing out of the Wheaties box. They didn't. None of that happened until after we started the war. They didn't exist. It was after the war that Zarqawi came out and declared himself, you know, the beta chapter of Al-Qaeda.
Yep.
Okay? Zarqawi was, we were offered Zarqawi's head on a platter. You know, these Republicans like to scream about, you know, Bill Clinton was offered Osama bin Laden, but he wouldn't go after him. Well, you know, the fact of the matter is, Zarqawi is the one who really got the insurgency going, bubbling along nice and hot. Remember?
Well, yeah, because he did a lot of the things that you'd want to do to outrage the people to get, you know, the internal strife.
And prior to March 2003, intelligence sources, and I mean, this isn't even speculative, okay? I mean, this is just confirmed. It just is. It's like 2 plus 2, and it is 4. Zarqawi was offered to us, and the White House turned down the offer on the rationale that if we killed him, it would lessen the rationale for going to war.
Yeah.
I mean, you can Google it. It's there. It's not hard to find.
Oh, I know, Bob, and that's why I'm saying what I'm saying. I mean, this is what I mean. What I'm saying here is we're engineering it, so we are there, no matter what. So what does that tell you? That that no matter what, we want to go in there. We're going to do whatever it takes. We're going to ignore this. We're going to ignore that. We're going to suppress this information. We're going to hire mercenaries to do, you know, disgusting evil things. We're going to do all these things. So we stay there. So in that respect, I can't buy that we're getting out of there anytime soon. The powers that want us there are far too strong. They're far too interconnected, and we're not going anywhere. We're going to stay in that country forever. I mean, that's some of the only times that Bush has been honest when he talked about what's going to happen with the Iraq war and all that other stuff. You know, about the war on terror, that it's going to be decades and decades. And you know, I'm sorry to say this, but you know, and I hope it doesn't deflate anybody or any activist balloons, because that just means that we need to sharpen up. We need to wise up to this whole point. We can't just sit here and let them go because of thinking that, oh, well, just let's get a Democrat in and, you know, they'll get it. Yeah, I know.
No, that's not automatic.
No, I know. I mean, we all know that, yeah, they had a slim majority and, you know, oh, well, they have a slim majority, they can't really do anything. But that's nonsense, because if you look at what the Democrats have been doing, okay, oh, they have no problem passing spy bills on American citizens. Oh, they have no problem doing that kind of stuff. So you can't, and this is why I'm saying when is it that we, as the people, going to sit here and wake up to this stuff? I mean, it's going to take a draft. It's going to take this kind of stuff until we're at this point to turn. And all we really are asking for is honesty. That's what we're asking for. We're just asking for some honesty. I mean, if you were honest about it, okay, all right, granted, we wouldn't be in that situation where we're at, but if they were honest about it, and people would stop thinking, oh, that Al-Qaeda had something to do with 9/11, I mean, that Al-Qaeda and Saddam were in cahoots with 9/11, and all the other things that the silly things that these people say, we wouldn't be in this problem right now. But, you know, Saddam had to trade in oil and euros, and we can't have that. And that's Iran. Iran's trading oil and euros, and we can't have that. And Bob, you know, the more and more we sit here and look at this garbage, the more and more we sit there and talk about it, and people say, oh, well, you know, that little asshole makes me sick, that suit said. Who is he kidding? That guy's a veteran. Who the hell are you to say this? This guy actually earned his right to speak. This guy is one of the guys that actually went there and did your crap. And he's sick of it, and he's sick of the lies that you did to him. So, and that's what you're going to do, and then you're going to get him arrested and get him pulled out of that chamber because he's got a sign. You're going to sit here and, you know, the minister of the hip-hop coalition, you know, he accidentally bumped into a cop's shoe. So they break his leg.
Yeah.
I mean,
you're under arrest with prejudice.
People. Yeah. We got to wake up, people. I mean, because this is something that, you know, like, and I hate to sound 60s, but the pigs, okay, the pigs want us there. And they're going to do whatever it takes to keep us there. And I mean, ever. If they're going to do whatever it takes, anybody wants to sit there and do a little Google search, you just go Google up Northwood's document, and you can see how far these people are actually willing to go when you talk about the higher echelons of the military. Okay, so nobody be fooled in thinking that, oh, they wouldn't go and kill civilians in Iraq just to keep, you know, foster civil strife within the country. Oh, they wouldn't do that. Oh, you bet your ass they would.
The most money that we will pay an Iraqi civilian for unintentionally murdering a member of his family is $5,000. Okay.
Was it five? I thought it was two.
2,500. Maybe it's 2,500. Okay. Either way, small potatoes. Measure that against the amount of money that is being made by this war. This war is damn good business. Okay.
Is it always?
Sure it is. You know, Smedley Butler. You know, war is a racket.
Oh, yeah. It is a racket.
So you know, 2,500 bucks, 30,000 times. Can't begin to compare to the money that Halliburton and GE and General Dynamics and on and on and on and on are making off of this scheme.
Yeah.
Because,
you know.
The
problem is, though, is they not only fund Republicans, they fund Democrats.
Darn straight. Hey, it's called hedging your bet.
I mean, you know how to play roulette. You got to hedge your bet. You know, you bet on black and red, you'll never lose.
Hey, you know, Ms. Kincaid didn't raise no dummy.
Oh, this is why, you know, I mean, what Petraeus is talking about, and honestly, I don't have answers in terms of, I don't think anybody does. Like, what can we do to, like, make us abandon these bases, abandon, you know, I know what we can do. We can get somebody in office that will really seriously, full-heartedly dedicate themselves to finding us an alternative source of energy. Because that's what this, in my opinion, that is what this whole thing is about. Yes, certainly religion plays a factor in it, but religion only plays a factor to manipulate the people in order to support, you know, getting us into this to grab the resources. You know, so we really seriously need to go full throttle on this. We should be spending, instead of, you know, spending I don't know how many billions of dollars, you know, paying for mercenaries to run around, we need to start putting those $2 billion or $3 billion or a couple hundred billion dollars into alternative energies. You know, and not so much as, you know, infrastructure in terms of wind. I mean, I'm talking like, you know, let's go into the theoreticals for a little bit. Let's put more than $10,000 into that kind of stuff. You know, let's sit here and do something correct. Let's do something, you know, and yeah, granted, the end result might be, you know, a success, and in that success we might lose the hegemony on the, you know, energy reserves of the world, and, you know, all of a sudden, you know, third world countries might be able to pull themselves up by their bootstraps eventually, you know, because they'd have a nice clean source of free energy. Or cheap energy. So this is one of these things that, I mean, we really have to do. And, you know, I don't hear anybody talking about it. I don't hear anybody talking about it with urgency that it's required for us to talk about it. And they talk about it, oh, well, yeah, global warming. Well, global warming, schmorming, we're never going to see the impacts of global warming if we continue to go to war over resources. And this is, I don't know if it's too much or I don't know if it's too little, but this is something that people have to really consider. We are going to war over resources. We're not the only ones that use the resources. So what does that mean? Eventually, we're going to butt heads. If we go into Iran, you think Russia's going to be happy about that? You think China's going to be happy about that? We do that. If we do that, okay, and I'm sure these people have thought, I don't even know, but let's say we do that, and what if China starts wanting to cash in all the debt that they own on us?
Well, you know, You mentioned all of that, and our intrepid news ninja, Gene, just shot me a link. You were talking about a reason to go kill Iran?
Hmm.
Headline from the UPI, United Press International. Analysis. Iran moves to ditch U.S. dollar. Faced with U.S. economic sanctions and a weak dollar, Tehran is demanding foreign energy companies do business in yen and euros, despite increasingly desperate need for investment. In a deal announced last week, Japan's Nippon Oil agreed to buy oil from Iran using yen instead of the traditional U.S. dollars. The agreement comes after yada, 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 yada. Now, here's the backstory. I told you where the story comes from. United Press International.
Yep.
Who owns United Press International?
Hearst?
No. Reverend Moon.
No. Oh, that's right.
Reverend Moon, who owns the Washington Times. These are the right-wing organs for selling the war against Iran.
Yeah.
See, this is going to be declared an act of economic warfare. Remember how once we realized that there were no weapons of mass destruction, Chicken George started coming out and talking about how that we didn't find them, but we know that Iraq had weapons related plan program activities.
Programs.
Remember?
Yeah, he had thoughts.
This is that. Yeah. When you say something like economic warfare, you're talking about weapons-related planned program activities.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm certainly aware that Iran's been wanting to move to the euro for a while. So is Hugo Chavez in Venezuela. I mean, and it's not even so much that, you know, like, just so people don't take it to, they're just, you know, trying to undermine the U.S. currency. Saddam went to the euro, and then we went straight up in there. But the thing is... it's because of what the dollar is worth versus the euro. I mean, you know, the drug dealers of the world, they're switching to the euro too. Why? Because they count their money by weighing it, okay? And that's how they move their money around, right? But if you have an American dollar, and which is worth more, the euro or the American dollar? Obviously, the euro is. So when you're talking about that, you're talking about weight. You're talking about just sheer weight, so you actually get your pallets and pallets upon pallets of money, you know, and then you can, you know, you would just, it would be less space. It would be more efficient to move that stuff around. So that's what we're actually looking at. And that takes it into a whole nother level of, you know, what's going on in this country with our predatory capitalism and, these hedge funds and all this other junk that's sitting here basically gutting us. That's, you know, this NAFTA, I mean, gutting us. You know, we're talking about, they were talking on the news brief a little while ago on how U.S. imports, you know, we've cut the trade deficit this year by $200 million. $200 million. We're talking about the size of our economy. What is $200 million? $200 million is nothing. They look at $200 million like we look at, you know, $200. You know, it's money, but it's nothing like, you know.
$1 billion. See, I got my little finger. $1 billion.
Yeah, $100 million. Bush. Yeah, I read that too. That's another. Yeah. And did you like Tweety Bird's question?
Why would he like an insane megalomaniac?
Why would he look up to a clueless megalomaniac?
Yeah, clueless megalomaniac.
Oh, I don't know, Tweety. You tell me.
Probably because he smells like Aqua Velva.
He's sexy. Yeah, he's got. Oh, is that guy a?
He's got a man smell. That Dr. Evil. He's got a man smell.
Oh, you say Aqua Velva, it makes me think of Fred Thompson, and I just. They're really serious about this, and they really like. I hear pundits all. He's the opposite of Reagan. He's a politician.
How is Fred Thompson? How's anything going to happen good for him? This guy was a lobbyist for the Libyans. Okay, this guy was a lobbyist for Muammar Gaddafi. I mean, I'm not kidding. He worked. He worked as a lobbyist for Libya during the Pan Am flight bombing Lockerbie, Scotland stuff.
Yep.
Really? I mean, not kidding. I mean,
I know. But he has a red truck, you know.
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
Yeah. And
I know.
A young
I know.
Wife. And it's just
who's running his campaign, by the way?
Is she?
Yeah. I mean, she's done. She's pulling a Nancy Reagan, and she's done. She may be more like Nancy than he is like Ronald, insofar as. I don't know. Maybe I don't know if she's hired the astrologer yet, but yeah, she's running the campaign, and there are a lot of people who are really pissed off about that.
But I don't think. I'll tell you what. I think he has as much chance as Dennis Kucinich would have. I mean, if you actually sat them in a room, and you know,
that's the crazy thing. Dennis Kucinich has ideas. And Fred Thompson is just sitting out there, but that's how Republicans are. Republicans don't want a primary process. They object to this primary process they're in the middle of right now. Republicans like coronations.
Oh, yeah.
That's why they got so dirty with McCain after McCain won New Hampshire in 2000 and went out, you know, did you know he had a black baby? You know, and did all of that stuff in South Carolina. I mean, the really filthy stuff is already starting on the Republican side. As a matter of fact, Mitt Romney's campaign got busted in the last day or so for putting a website up called phonyfred.com. But that's okay, because another one of Mitt Romney's people got busted for running one of these physical, mental, and sexual abuse camps for teenagers, too. So, I mean, you know, it's what they do.
It's never, right?
You know, it's what they do. Hey, Albert, it's news time, buddy. I gotta roll out of here, but I do love these conversations.
I do, too, Bob. You get better, all right?
I hope so. Tomorrow's the last thing of antibiotics. After that, I think we have to go to, like, grass skirts and bones and noses.
Oh, well, that works, too.
All right. Talk to you later.
Dream wheel for you, Bob.
All right. Yeah. Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
So, what? You want to chime in on this? This is Conversation Radio. There's no end to what we can talk about. And just remember, when he was asked, is it making us safer? General Rock Me Amadeus, thank you, dude, said, I don't know. Jeez, what? Okay, so chime in if you want to. 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on, or 304-658-5453. It's all just that easy. This is America's liberal voice. This is your voice. This is The Horn. I'm Bob.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush is expected to address the nation this week and endorse the recommendations of General David Petraeus. The Associated Press reports he'll announce the reduction of American troops in Iraq by 30,000 by next summer. During the second day of Senate hearings, many Republicans told General David Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker they're uneasy about the lack of political progress in Iraq. Both Petraeus and Crocker acknowledge the Iraqi government remains largely dysfunctional. Democrats, including Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi, quickly called Petraeus' strategy a blueprint for 10 more years of war. Democrat Joseph Biden said the surge should stop and the troops should come home. Despite yesterday's optimistic report to Congress by General Petraeus, the latest AP Ipsos poll says the majority of Americans also hold a more pessimistic view. 59% of those surveyed say history will judge the Iraq War a failure. A Senate panel has voted to back a pay raise for military personnel in an amount even greater than the president recommended. The panel, however, trimmed spending for some weapons programs. A somber ceremony at Ground Zero marked today the sixth anniversary of the terrorist attacks. In all, 2,993 people died when planes crashed into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. In Ankara, Turkish police on alert because of the 9/11 anniversary discovered a large bomb in a parking lot that could have been devastating had it detonated. Thousands were evacuated after sniffer dogs detected the explosives. The Israeli Air Force attacked Hamas targets in the Gaza Strip. The government's deciding what other actions to take against the Palestinian militants. In the early morning, Hamas had attacked an Israeli military base with missiles, wounding at least 70 soldiers while they slept. In Islamabad, Pakistan, Pakistan's Supreme Court was asked to intervene in yesterday's deportation of former Pakistani Premier Nawaz Sharif. President Pervez Musharraf arrested his political rival, Sharif, as soon as he arrived in Pakistan after 8 years of exile. In Veracruz, Mexico, suspected radical guerrillas blew up 4 natural gas pipelines, forcing the evacuation of more than 24,000 people. In Cleveland, Ohio, the mayor is urging the state legislature to prohibit anyone under the age of 21 from possessing a firearm to cut down on crime. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and Business next.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Oops. I think there was a little technical difficulty out at the QNN studios. These things happen. It's 5 minutes after the hour. It's hour three of tonight's Tuesday night edition of Head On. By the way, some interesting shows coming up. They're all interesting. Come on, I pour heart and soul into this, people. Some interesting guests coming up tomorrow evening on the show. And especially for those of you who listen from the Great Northwest, there is a fair underway this month in Puyallup. Am I saying it right? Puyallup? The Western Washington State Fair, something like that. And if you're anywhere near there and you have plans on going to the fair, you need to keep an eye out for the magic act of Steve Trash, Rockin' Eco Warrior. Steve will be performing daily during the fair out there. He will also be on the program tomorrow evening because Steve is also a filmmaker. And he has a new film out called Mystic Swirl. And it is a charming film of about a half hour's length. I highly recommend it. I own it. You can go to filmbaby.com, and just do a search for Mystic, M-Y-S-T-I-C, Mystic Swirl. And you can have a look at it. You can order it there. I think it's like $20. Now, how would I make this connection? Well, Steve is another one of those folks who came up out of Northwest Alabama, an incredibly creative, intensely fruitful place for performance energies, for some reason. And he is a personal friend. And he does amazing work. He has done work as a magician. He was doing magic acts when we were in high school together. And he has parlayed that into a career and is doing an amazing show three times a day, I think noon, 2, and 4, out at the Western Washington State Fair. I'll have to check the name of it. But it's in Puyallup. Help me, somebody. I'm trying. Puyallup, Washington. Indian word that means river of death, okay? Because they all mean river of death. But stop by if you go to that fair and tell him Bob said hello. And I'll say hello to him tomorrow evening as well. Also, on Thursday, we have Jay Lakin coming on. Jay's going to be talking about something that I consider to be a personal freedom issue. He's going to be talking about the ongoing efforts to either make America more free or to stifle America's freedoms a little bit more vis-a-vis the Congress and so-called internet gambling. I think you'll enjoy that as well. And then a good friend of the program on Friday, Mikey Weinstein from the Military Religious Freedom Foundation, will be coming by to talk about whether or not the Pentagon actually wants to, you know, endorse Armageddon. So that's the rest of the week. Also, at some point in time, if you want to go to YouTube or whatever, look up Mystic Swirl, you can see the trailer for the film there, too. It's just a beautiful, beautiful little piece of filmmaking. And you will enjoy it. All right, let's go to the phones. Jim is calling from his remote undisclosed location. Hey, Jim, welcome to the program.
Good evening. How are you, Bob?
I've been better. This inner ear infection is messing with me in a large way.
That can be quite irksome, that's for sure.
I've never had one before, and I never want one again, I can assure you.
No, I can certainly concur. I just wanted to say one thing, and this to me expresses how I think a lot of people feel about those people, those soldiers who have been lost. And I don't know where this comes from. It's just somewhere inside. But it goes like this. To the rest of the world, he may have been just a soldier. But to me, he was all the world.
Indeed. Indeed.
Thank you, sir.
You're more than welcome, Jim. You take care. Succinct and to the point, and so very true. And Bob is calling from North Dakota. Hey, Bob.
How are you doing?
So-so.
That's you know, right here.
Hanging in there.
You're having an inner ear infection.
That's what I'm told, and I tell you what, this thing sucks for air, I can promise.
No doubt. I hate to be the one to tell you I told you so.
Well, if anybody's going to do that, I'd just assume it was you, Bob.
Well, I told you so. They was rigging up the hall nukes 6 or 8 months ago. I told you so. I did it on air.
You did.
That they were changing them. They were setting them up. They were getting ready to hang nukes. I told you that. I told the world that. But
how do you get away with it, Bob?
Huh?
How do you get away with it?
Well,
or not you, they. How do they get away with it? I mean, they're not just sitting there, stack of conventionals here and a stack of nukes there, are they? I mean, these things are in.
Oh no. Hey, I personally go on board Minot Air Force Base on a regular basis. Okay.
Okay.
I go shopping over there, like you go shopping at Walmart or Kmart.
Yeah, because I mean, there's a PA.
I go over there like I'm going to the market, right?
Sure.
And I talk to the guys that do the job that you're talking about. Okay.
Wow.
I talk to them. I sit down with them. I visit with them, and they look at me as an old gray hair. You know, I'm one of them. And, you know, they're as tight-lipped a bunch as you can ever get with. But when you're talking to somebody that's already been there, it isn't that strange that they'll tell you there's things going on that they do not agree with, but it's, you know, it's within their military occupational specialty to do whatever, and they do what they're ordered to do, as long as they're not, you know, being, you know, court-martialed or threatened. And if they're threatened, then, you know, then it gets difficult to stand outside of that box. They're in a box, Bob. They're caught in a trap. You know, they're like rats in a trap, and they can't get out unless they follow the yellow brick road or go through the maze and get their little bit of sustenance, that little whatever. They're trained to do certain jobs, and then they do them. They don't question orders unless they are themselves at risk. And right now they're not at risk, because who is questioning the military? No one.
Well, it's unpatriotic, isn't it?
Huh?
I mean, it's unpatriotic to question the military, isn't it? I mean, that's...
Well, that's the game they keep... You know, they keep... It's a game, Bob. They got you in a box.
But, Bob, let me ask you a question, though, and this isn't philosophical or anything like that. This is just purely operational and technical. How in God's name do you get those damn things under the wing of a B-52? Under the circumstances.
Okay. The only way you can hang a nuke under a B-52 is under strict presidential order. It's not anything else, Bob. They were ordered to hang those nukes and fly them. It had nothing to do with anything else. The president or the, what do you want to call him? What's that Mike Malloy calls him? Chuckle nuts?
Yeah, the chimperer.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Agnes.
Well, No. That's okay, Bob. This is a very, very important little piece of inquiry, and I want to go through it real slow, like, not for you, but for me, because I'm trying to get my tiny little mind around it. You have either 5 or 6 cruise missiles with nuclear tips. Now, the official version that was put out was that the cruise missiles were supposed to be decommissioned, but they were supposed to have their nuclear tips removed first. So, in I know. Look, so somewhere along the chain of command, there's an order that goes out to probably down from a captain to a second lieutenant or whatever, and he's got a platoon under him, and they wheel the damn things out.
Don't go there. The men that assemble nuclear weapons and set them up. Oh, God.
Wait. Another question, then. Is there a... You say assemble. Do the nuclear warheads that go on the tip one of these cruise missiles, are they sitting there, or do you have to go get the warhead, put it on the missile, and then... Because the way it was put out, they made it sound like the cruise missiles were just there with the warheads on them, and the warheads were supposed to have been removed first.
No. It doesn't work that way, Bob. Don't even, think that they're ready to go off or sitting in some bunker somewhere ready to explode. They have to be assembled. They have a special team trained in assembly of nuclear weapons. They do it prior to mounting them, okay? They don't have them just sitting in a warehouse. They have to be properly assembled before they can be mounted on the wing of that B-52 or in the belly of a B-52, because they don't sit on the wings of a B-52. They sit up inside. They have special carrying racks. There are special bomb racks that hold them, and they do not have them hanging outside. When they bring them into an area, they have to bring them back down to get them, because they're carrying nuclear warheads, so they'll bring them back down and take them off and then remove them from the bird, unless they're going to fly it directly from point A to point B and drop it, okay? Because they're carrying this much explosives, and I'm certain that they weren't hanging under the wing of that B-52. Because, see, people don't understand. A B-52 has a bomb bay, and they put the bombs or the missiles or the nukes or the cruise missiles up inside the bomb bay. They open it up, they drop the rack, and then they set them off. They do not have them hanging outside like you see them on these jets.
Well, that's the official story was put out that these were wing-mounted cruise missiles.
Okay, they're wing-mounted cruise. Okay, that's the official story. But if anyone has ever seen one of these big birds up close and personal on a weekly or daily or monthly basis, they will tell you that they don't mount them on the wings. They don't. Not on the big birds. They don't, because it's aerodynamics, okay? You close up the bomb bay, you can drop the rack and set the birds off. That's the way it works. They got special racks that they put them on. It's not the same as the ones that hang up inside the bomb bay when they go to drop conventional bombs. These are bombs that have to be let outside the bird and then set off. To their point, and then they detonate. It's a different setup for the bombs.
Well, anybody who's ever sat down and watched Dr. Strangelove knows that. Slim Pickens is sitting on the bomb, and they're setting the fuse for an airburst at so many thousand feet.
Yeah.
So
he rides it down there, slapping it with his cowboy hat, just like George Bush would do, right?
Yep.
I doubt George Bush would have the nerve to do that. He'd be screaming like a schoolgirl all the way down. You know, mommy, 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 help me, help me, help me. See, that's the difference between truth and fiction. Someone knew they were sending those bombs down there, Bob. They notified someone else within that chain of command that they could trust, and then they said, oh, well, it they had this secret communique that went out to the press, and woe unto anyone that didn't see those bombers flying over the USA with these nuclear weapons. See, that's the rub.
For me, yeah, the rub lies not so much in the officer corps, Bob, but somewhere along the way there's a spec 2 or a spec 3 who scratches his head and goes, am I really supposed to be doing this?
No, they don't, you know, if they have their orders, Bob, you can't, I mean, unless you have been there, you can't say no unless it is, and this is a special directive from the United States, and no one else can release nuclear weapons for removal or moving it from one point to another point unless it is directly from the President of the United States and the White House and those in charge of it. So I wouldn't say that George Bush had anything to do with it, but I'd say that Dick Cheney has his stinky little toes right in there, right up to his ankles. He's got his feet, both feet, in the door, and he thinks that, hey, I am untouchable because I'm not an executive member of this government, nor am I a member of the Senate. I'm kind of special. That's who we're dealing with here. We're dealing with Darth Vader, and we're dealing with the evil empire, and George Bush is just what was that thing, Chewbacca or something? I don't know. One of those little wogs that just does what Darth Vader tells him to do.
Well, it's scary any way you slice it, Bob.
The truth, Bob.
Yeah, but well, for what truth. We know, though, I guess they flew them all the way from Minot to Barksdale. I guess they're still sitting in Barksdale.
Well, yeah. They're sitting there, Bob. They're sitting there waiting to be sent somewhere else. They're not. They haven't flown them back to Minot and put them back into the cold locker that we got up here. They have them, and they're sitting there. And if they get the order, they'll fly them and they'll drop them, and we will have World War III, which Albert Einstein said, "I do not know what weapons they will fight World War III with, but I do know what weapons they will fight World War IV with." And they asked him, well, what weapons are those, Albert? And he said, sticks and stones. Because that's what they're going to do. If they go into this thing, it will be that Holocaust that Albert Einstein warned us against. And every other thinking human being knows that if we start dropping nukes on the Middle East, we're going to have them raining down from China, Russia, probably England and France and Germany,
India,
and everywhere else.
Screw them. India and Pakistan will be plenty.
Well, India and Pakistan, they haven't got the wherewithal to deliver them to us, but Great Britain does, Russia does, France does, but don't go with India and Pakistan. They don't have the delivery systems that these other nations will see us as the Third Reich. They will see us as the Fourth Reich or Fifth Reich or whatever Adolf Bush wants us to be. And they will see us as that threat to them, and they will rain hell on us, and it will be our fault because we don't get up in the morning and smell the coffee. All we do is listen to this pundit, that pundit, and we don't even realize that we are the target of opportunity for the rest of the world. They're getting sick and tired of Big Brother telling them what to do, and they're about ready to kick our ass. Fact. The rest of the world is sick of listening to this drivel coming out of the right-wing media and the right-wing White House and every other pundit that's out there screaming to say that, well, Hillary's bad. Well, I had somebody tell me that, yes, Vince Foster, yes, Hillary, yeah, she snuck up behind him and shot him in the shotgun. And this guy lives up the road a quarter of a mile from me. And I says, whoa, whoa,
yeah.
Where do you get your information? Well, he listens to Rush Limbaugh, of course.
And there you have it.
Huh?
And there you have it, yeah.
Yeah. And see, that's the problem, Bob. They listen to others. I don't listen to Bob Kincaid because I think Bob's going to give me information that I don't already know. I listen to you for affirmation of information that I have as a fact. And you affirm it every time you get on the head on. I hear nothing but affirmation of my, not beliefs, but my knowledge. People.
Well, I appreciate the knowledge. I appreciate the knowledge you've brought tonight, Bob, because it's a fairly technical issue, and it, yeah, my God, that's your backyard, my friend.
Yeah, I shop there like you go to Walmart or Kmart. I just do. I don't shop. I don't like going to Walmart or Kmart. But
you earned the right to go to that base exchange.
No, I love to go there because you know why? When I go on board base, I'm back home. I have men in uniform that I can sit and talk with and be around, and I feel like I came home. I come out in this civilian world. You know what I feel like? I feel like like that fifth wheel. It doesn't have any use out here, and people out here don't understand. You know, four wheels work good, but that spare tire is only good when something goes flat.
Yeah.
Well, when I go on board base, I'm not a spare tire anymore. I'm actually one with them, and they are with me, and I understand them. I talk to them as brothers talk to brothers, and they are just as confused about this as I am. How can a nation of knowledgeable people allow such a wog to lead them? I mean, good God, they don't think much of this. I'm talking to, rank people. They are as disgusted with this Iraq thing as you are, even more so because it's their friends and their neighbors.
It's their family.
Brothers that are dying there.
Well, this, this article that I read about, this article about blogging and blog posts from Marine Corps Times, it doesn't pull any punches. It's straight up.
Yeah,
and people who've been over in the sand pit are coming back, and they're not happy, and they're willing to risk administrative punishment. One guy got a less than honorable discharge for it, for just telling the truth about what's going on over there.
Yeah, well, that man that took that less than honorable because he told the truth is a true Marine.
Well, his name is Special.
Like he is in Smedley Butler's territory when he stands up and says,
"War
is a racket, and those that wage war, especially a war of aggression against a people that never did a thing to you, are aggressors, and we have waged a war of aggression since what was it, 2000?
Well, I think his behavior was pretty heroic, Bob. His name is Specialist Elioni Israel, okay? And he said, the truth will come out, and there is nothing they can do to hide it. The occupation is a disaster. I'm convinced that every day it continues, that it makes America and the Iraqis less safe. Now, in addition to posting that, he also was court-martialed, and he refused to go on any further combat missions.
Yeah. I salute him, and I believe that Ken would do the same. He would salute him, too. He would stand before him and say, thank you.
Well, that's a young man who understands the real obligations, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to have to let you go.
I'm good. Yeah, we're going to roll on. I got a couple of calls stacked up, Bob.
All right, get her done. And, hey, truth, peace, and stand, people. Stand up for something. Stand up for yourself, if nothing else, but stand up for something. Don't sit down and let this thing happen to you. Just stand up and look them in the eye and spit. And then if they blink, knock them on their butt.
Thanks, Bob. Take care.
My friend.
Bye now.
And good luck.
Thanks. You too. And Wayne. Hey, Wayne.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How about you?
Pretty good. I hate to disagree with Gunny, but you would be absolutely amazed at the things that they could hang from the wings of a B-52.
Okay, we're in a technical discussion now.
Yes, and, you know, I'm trying to do a search here. I think before too long I'll be able to send you a picture of B-52s with cruise missiles hanging from the wings.
You worked on those, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. You know, in 1968, I went to Guam for Boeing aircraft. And, you know, that was, there were 152 stationed on that base. It was the most amazing thing I'd ever seen. And it was the first time that I saw B-52 bombers with wing racks for extra bombs. And, you know, I can't remember exactly, but it seems like there were three racks on each wing that, you know, carried 10 bombs in each rack. And, you know, plus the bomb bay.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it was absolutely incredible, the payload that these things could carry. And occasionally when they flew every 6 hours, six B-52s would take off, turn. And, you know, it was rather routine, you know. Now, they did start to lose a few, you know, that got shot down and stuff. But I could remember incidents where a 52 would be coming in for a landing and one of the bombs didn't drop. It was hung on the rack and drop, and, you know, when the plane landed, the thing would fall off, and sometimes the plane would run over them and blow tires, but the bomb wouldn't blow because there's like a little propeller in the front with a wire running through them when they're on the rack. And when they drop, then of course the wire comes out, a little propeller, the propeller goes towards the bomb, and boom, you know.
Yeah.
But like I say, I'm going to try to find a picture here. I don't know if I can, or I don't know if somebody's going to bust down my door if I keep looking for one.
Well, the overarching question remains, Wayne, how did this happen? Now, the minute the story broke, it immediately said that, you know, an inquiry has been launched, and I think it was some bird colonel who was relieved of his duties. Well, you know what? Bird colonels don't make decisions about loading nuclear weapons onto aircraft.
No, they do.
Do they? Am I wrong?
No, they do not.
And the story that we were given, and it's convoluted and it's screwy and it doesn't make much sense, is that the missiles, not the warheads, were to be decommissioned. And that in order to decommission these missiles, they had to be transported aboard a B-52... from Minot Air Force Base, North Dakota, to Barksdale Air Force Base, Louisiana. So, you know, presumably you've got an order to decommission these cruise missiles, and you've got an order to transport them. Now, how in God's name do you get from the nuclear weapons cold storage to the airplane with the missiles still bearing nuclear warheads? Wouldn't that be the first thing you did? Take the warhead off if the order was to decommission the missile?
That would seem so. You know, I don't know what all the stories are, but you can be assured of one thing. They are not telling you the truth.
That's the thing. There's enough facts here. You don't have to jump into some the deep end of the conspiracy pool. You don't have to look for a conspiracy. This is a monstrous screw up, or else it was, as Bob said, you know, you don't move these things without a presidential order. You know, there's keys and ID badges and two guys looking at each other going, "Do you agree?" I mean, we've seen the movies.
Right, and secret codes.
Yeah, decoder rings and everything.
I'm trying to think of what, you know, when I was in the Air Force, I belonged to the Strategic Air Command.
Yeah.
Which no longer exists. And there have been a couple of movies made about that. You know, one of them might have been named SAC, but...
I think it was called Strategic Air Command, and it had June Allison and Jimmy Stewart in it.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, they... Well, the movie goes through the whole procedure of how... It's not an easy thing to do, and a bird colonel doesn't decide to do that. Now, he, you know...
A one-star general doesn't decide to do that.
No, he doesn't. It has to come from the top. And the top is called the commander chief. So, anyway, I'm going to keep looking for this thing. Maybe I'll be able to send you something.
All right, I appreciate it. I'd like to see that.
Well, it's they were amazing. I mean, it was absolutely amazing. What, you know, like I say, the things that they could do when they want to do them. So, and like I say, you know, whatever they're telling you, you could be sure you're not hearing the truth. There's something going on.
Because the truth would make your blood run cold.
Yes, it would.
Even and that and even if it's not, you know, even if it's not because of a run up to a war with Iran, even if the truth is that this is a monstrous screw up, it would make your blood run cold. You know, these were 5 to 100 kiloton nuclear devices.
Yeah.
You know what? What is that? I'm looking at my map here, and what does that do to say? Kansas City, Missouri. What does that do to Sioux City, Iowa? You know, Fort Smith, Arkansas, Shreveport. It poisons an area around that for, you know, thousands and thousands of years.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, it's well.
And the lucky ones are the ones who die in the explosion.
Well, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. You know, and World War Four might be fought with sticks and stones, but there won't be very many wielding them, I'll tell you that.
That'll be the War of the Cockroaches.
Exactly. Exactly.
Well, you know, these fools are scaring me to death. I'm not really, you know, I don't wake up thinking about what Osama's going to do to me. I wake up worrying about what the Bush administration's going to do to me, either intentionally or based on, you know, when we consider what this is the anniversary of, or by just not paying attention and giving a damn. I mean, do you remember what they were all worked up about before September 11th, 2001? They were working on their missile shield to protect us from Kim Jong-il.
Yeah, right.
Meanwhile, they got the presidential daily briefing called Bin Laden Determined to Strike in U.S. That's sitting on their desk. And they've also got something that was handed to them the day they took office from the Hart-Rudman Commission that predicted 9/11. You know what they did with that report, Wayne?
They set it aside.
They gave it to the FEMA dude.
They gave it to what?
They gave it to the FEMA dude.
Who, Chernoff?
No,
Brown?
No, well, it wasn't Brown at that time. Brown was like number two.
Okay.
I think that was also a pun. They gave it to the FEMA department. This is nothing. You take care of it. We got to worry about tax cuts. Like I said, they scare me to death. Osama, not so much.
I know what you mean, my good man.
All right, I'll be talking to you later. Take
okay,
care, Wayne.
Buddy.
Bye now.
Bye.
And Marty. Welcome aboard, Marty. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Bob. How you doing?
You know, six of one, half dozen of another.
Oh, I know that feeling. I've felt kind of the same way you've been feeling the past few days. We were almost kindred spirits there. Oh, let's see. Boy, why did I call? That's the next question. I don't know. Anybody, have you talked at all about the encroaching the encroaching, I don't know, what do you want to call it, the Talibanization of the United States?
I think that's kind of been a theme all night long.
Oh. I don't know. It's just because of a lot of things I've heard and have read, like the apparently a couple of young women who were told on Southwest Airlines, you must cover up or you cannot fly. Have you heard those two stories?
No.
Okay.
Is this like a breastfeeding mother or something?
No. The first one is of a rather attractive blonde, 23-year-old, and attending college in San Diego, apparently trying to get to a doctor's appointment in Tucson, which kind of has me curious. Why is she going from San Diego to Tucson to go to the doctor? The doctor's in San Diego, but apparently Tucson may be her permanent address. Trying to get on and trying to fly, and apparently just before they closed the door and pushed back the plane to take off, the ramp supervisor, I guess, had her get out of her seat, brought her up to the to the front of the plane, whatever, and told her that she had to, she was dressed too provocatively.
Recently? So, I mean, this decade?
Yeah, apparently it was a few days ago. Because I was, this morning I was looking at the MSNBC webpage, and finding out who Keith Olbermann called the worst person in the world last night. And that story was up there. I'm going, what the heck is this? Too sexy for Southwest Airlines? And Southwest is saying, oh, well.
Oh, I smell a song parody coming. I'm too sexy for my airplane.
That would be a good parody. But anyway, they said that, they were telling her she wasn't going to be able to fly and they said, oh, if you want, you can go to one of the stores and buy something else to cover up. I mean, and apparently they had her on the Today Show and this morning or yesterday, and she's just an attractive girl wearing a very nice outfit. I mean, everything was covered up as it was supposed to. I mean, the skirt was a little short, but hey, she's 23 years old and is a waitress at Hooters, apparently. And to say this, and then they went and they did it to somebody else, and I don't know the details and all of that. And I'm thinking, it's like, beware, young women. If you fly now, you are, or especially Southwest, you may have to be covered head to toe.
Yep, burkas available in the souvenir shop.
Yes. And, of course, then you get on the the TSA hit list if you go dressed like that as well.
Well, see, this runs contrary to a theory that I've had going on for a while now, Marty. I think, if I had the power to start a movement in the country, I would encourage all, and I mean, flabby 44-year-olds like myself.
Oh my God.
Everybody goes to get on the airplane in a Speedo. Women in two-piece bathing suits. I mean, where you got nothing to hide at that point, because we got to take her shoes off, we got to get her feet looked out. I mean, it's like the TSA must be hiring podiatrists or something. So everybody show up in guys in a Speedo, girls in a skimpy two-piece. They got nothing to complain about.
Oh, they'll find something to complain about. I mean,
well, apparently, according to this story, they did.
Well, she's talking. Well, she was saying that somebody, the guy wasn't saying he himself thought she was with somebody, but maybe. I mean, my impression is that somebody else complained, and I kept thinking too provocative to be on the plane. It's like, what does the flight crew have some kind of camera looking inside the cabin, and they felt that they'd be looking at her more.
Jealousy. Marty, it was
more,
jealousy.
More than paying attention.
She was hotter than the flight attendants.
Possibly. I mean, I may have to talk to my cousin about that, because she actually is a flight attendant, and she just left Southwest Airlines to go join Virgin America Line. So I may have to talk to her about that. See, did you get the story I sent you about the thing about from NewsHounds about taking less vacation?
Yes, I did.
But, I mean, isn't anything more ridiculous in your life? I mean, I remember there was I think it was last year or the year before, you had an actor named James Morrison, and I remember this because he was in the series Space Above and Beyond, and he was talking about, hey, great, you took less vacation than anybody else, and your time is our money. And I don't know. I'm rambling. I'm sorry.
No. That's quite all right. You know, our good friend Joe Vecchio, who's on at 11 o'clock Eastern in the mornings, has said on a number of times that his favorite or his least favorite, his most despised phrase when he hears business numbers is to hear the business community talking about the productivity of the American worker. Because he said, every time you hear about productivity going up, you never hear about wages rising.
No.
You just hear about vacation going down.
Well, vacation going down, foreclosures going up, and... Oh, what else is there? How's the price of gas out where you are?
Oh, we're at about $2.80 a gallon.
And gee, there's some place more expensive than California? I'm shocked. I just paid $2.71 or two or something like that.
Yeah, I paid $2.80. I paid $2.80 just a few days ago.
Oh, gee. I kept wondering, it's like, okay. Because at one time it got down to like into the 250s. And just imagine that. We're talking like, I'm talking, and certain others from California who might be listening will understand where I'm coming from, to the point where we're talking about 250 to 270s like it is now, and I'm in the Sacramento area, as cheap.
Well, see, that was the game all along.
Mm-hmm.
Because... You know, you run it up to $3, then you bring it back to $2.70, and people say, "Oh, it's bad. You know, that's cheaper than $3." Well, you know, by next year we'll be talking about $3 gas being cheap.
Yeah, everything.
It's all part of manipulating the consumer mindset, I think.
Yeah, I will definitely agree with that. So,
well, anyway. It's awful good talking to you. I don't hear from you very often. I know most of the time you're stuck at work or you have to make your commute before you can. Off the show, so you know.
Yeah, and any other time I would be, except I've got a union meeting in about half an hour, and so I'm just sitting here at my desk, and there's nobody else here. So.
Hot diggity, a union member.
Amen. Union of Professional Technical Employees, Local 6 out of UC Davis.
Hot dog, proud of you.
Now I just hope one of the administrators just did not hear me say that on a university phone. I might get in trouble for that.
Well, you take care and give our best to your brothers and sisters there in the local.
I shall do that. You have a good one, Bob.
All right, take care, Marty.
You too.
Bye now. And by the way, I've our intrepid news ninja Susan has sent along a couple of different photographs of, and as well as Wayne did too.
Hey there.
Hey, Susan.
I ran across a archived New York Times article, 1981, saying that the project to modify 168 B-52s for cruise missiles had just started, and they were talking about modifying them to carry 12 of the long-range missiles on pylons hung beneath the bomber wings. And those pictures I sent you, you can see them right up close to the main body of the wing of the airplane.
I'm looking at the photo now. Wayne sent one, you sent two, and you know they're there, and it looks like there's four. It looks like there's four, or I can't tell if it's two or four, tucked right in there by the fuselage, right under the main wing.
Yeah.
So
those are more or less ancillary. The main payload is and always will be out of the bomb racks.
Sure, but those cruise missiles have to fire, you know, almost at the instant they're dropped, or you know, maybe 100 feet or so or whatever. But you know, the engines start and boom, they go. You couldn't. It's not necessarily designed to do that out of the bomb bay, is it?
Yeah, actually, there are special racks that are in the bomb bay itself.
But I think I think the crucial point out of what Bob was saying, Susan, and tell me if you think I'm wrong, is that bird colonels don't do this.
No.
And
ever.
This and the whole plan had to come. Frankly, anytime you're fooling with nuclear weapons, there has to be some level of authorization from the White House, doesn't there?
I don't know per se about the White House. It has to come from the Pentagon. The person, the commander of the base, had to sign off on it. The base in North Dakota.
he had to sign off. The commander of that bomber wing had to sign off on that.
Exactly, and probably further down than that.
Yes.
Or further up the line.
Yeah, there's a, if you check the Internet Movie Database, there is a movie with, I think it was Rock Hudson, that had a real good portrayal of an operational readiness exercise.
Okay.
And it starts with the signal going off. And as far as these bases know, the balloon's gone up.
Well, that was kind of, that was the way that was part of the setup in Doctor Strangelove, wasn't it? The guys on the ground and the people in the planes had no way of discriminating fact from fantasy until they got a recall code.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
And it's scary, but there are rotary launch the bomb bays of these B-52s that have been retrofitted. How they do that. You know, I keep getting this image of a the cylinder for a Colt 45. That doesn't work. But it's somehow or another, they've managed to work them in so that they drop them just long enough. They drop just long enough to clear the body of the plane itself. And then the engines fire.
Yeah, because I was wondering about that. How would you keep from burning up the plane? But yeah, it drops a... By the time it's dropped, the plane's further, it is out in front, and it's considerably below. Okay, yeah.
Right, and you're dropping, you know, the B-52 is a high-altitude bomber. Even when it was carpet bombing in Nam, doing it from way, way, way up.
Oh, yeah.
Which is why the civilian casualties were so high, because you can't aim them suckers.
No, you can't, and at that height, you can't pinpoint the accuracy. That's why it's carpet bombing.
No. Yeah. The B-52, for all its beauty in flight, is a mass terror weapon. It's nothing like the precision strikes they did in World War II.
They were
low-altitude bombers.
It's the illogical extension of a fascinating science and technology.
Yes, the concept of total war. And it's, to me, it's a war crime.
Well, it was designed to carry nuclear weapons... and to be there on the borders of the Soviet Union as a deterrent. And
no,
of course,
no, it wasn't. It was designed with one purpose in mind, to wipe out the other side. If and when everything went up, the whole purpose behind it was mad.
Yeah, well, and we continue...
Mutual assured destruction.
And I know, and we continued to, whether it was submarine-based or... ICBMs, yada, 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 yada. The idea was to have a multiple means of striking back, because we do not avow a first strike policy.
Right, even though...
Except for the one first strike that we did and the second strike.
Yeah, the people who had authorized it by that time were already dead in a nuclear war, the Russians were assured, you'll get yours, Charlie.
Yep.
And that was basically, we balanced on that knife point for how many decades?
I know. Susan, thanks for the info.
You're welcome. Oh, by the way, Puyallup,
yeah,
you hit it pretty much dead on. The insiders, and my mother lived just outside of Puyallup, insiders have been known to call it Puy Loop.
You know, I won't even try. I'm just happy I got Puyallup.
You did good, Bob.
And I know Steve's having a wonderful time at the fair there, too.
You have a nice night.
Okay, you too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And Michelle. Hey, Michelle. Thanks for waiting.
Oh, no problem. Sounds like you had some good calls I got to listen to.
You know, this has perked me up considerably.
Well, you know, I just called. Now, mind you, I called about a documentary I saw last night on Showtime, but... I think it must have came out quite a... Have you heard of Zimpify or Zimpify?
Simplify?
Yeah, thank you, Simplify. Have you heard of that documentary?
I've heard of it. I haven't seen it.
Okay, it was wonderful. It's from a Marine's perspective, went in the beginning. What amazed me, because I know we're at the end of the show, what amazed me was first when he got into Iraq, meeting a little boy in the crowd of boys and girls that would come up to him, run up to him. And this boy found out his name. We're in this town for a couple of days, and he had to leave, you know, got orders, and the little boy was calling his name, Jeff, Jeff, Jeff. And later on, this Jeff Keyes reported that he was asked by another Marine if there was a Jeff here. There was a young boy at this town that was asking for Jeff Keyes. He had written his name on his arm. I mean, it's an absolutely beautiful story. The Marine is gay, and I'll tell you some points about the documentary. He herniated an area in his stomach and had to leave. It was devastating for him. But when he came back, he found out, it was then that he found out that there were no weapons of mass destruction. Everybody knew it here, of course, but no one over there knew it in the beginning, you know, in the first year, right? And so it just devastated him because he saw the Iraqis turning against him, and he was very saddened by his fellow Marines, some of their actions. But it was just an amazing human felt documentary, and this guy communicates so well. It's just absolutely, I would suggest anyone watch it. And that's why I called, because I was just, you know, it's like you guys moved me. I listened to every show I can, and just your heartfelt sympathy and empathy for your fellow citizens and human beings. You know, you don't put boundaries on things, and I appreciate that. So I thought I'd tell you, you gotta watch it if possible.
Okay, I'll check it out. I'll make every effort, and I appreciate you sharing it with us.
Yeah, and I told Agnes on Friday you guys get your little thing from San Diego.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes. It's nothing that they would outlaw in Alabama, by the way.
You know, I'm grateful for that because I know what's illegal in Alabama.
Well, Agnes might not be.
Yeah, there was one of those little that she just... Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All
thanks,
right.
Michelle. Well, you have a wonderful night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Wow, where'd the night go? You know, I haven't moved my head rapidly from side to side or anything, so we've gotten through the night okay. Here's hoping we can get through prayer meeting tomorrow night, because I got a couple of real, you know, the hair pullers. So stand by. The world's most fabulous conversation radio host is on his way. Peter Godbold, Strictly Confidential, right after the news. Thanks, Agnes. Thanks, Ben Birch. Thanks, John Fox. Thanks, Peter. And many thanks to the United Brotherhood of Carpenters who helped us get this network started and thereby are helping us, even now, save the American dream. And always, 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 Gina, RMR, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. The Dow Jones rose sharply today as investors grew more confident the Federal Reserve will lower interest rates next week. We'll have details coming up in our business segment. President Bush is expected to address the nation this week and endorse the recommendations of General David Petraeus and reduce American troops in Iraq by 30,000 by next summer. During the second day of Senate hearings, many rank-and-file Republicans told General David Petraeus and Ambassador Ryan Crocker they're uneasy about the lack of political progress in Iraq. Both Petraeus and Crocker acknowledge the Iraqi government remains largely dysfunctional. A somber ceremony at Ground Zero today, marking the sixth anniversary of the terrorist attacks. In all, 2,993 people died when the planes crashed into the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and in Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Help is on the way for America's ailing bridges. The Senate approved $1 billion to repair and replace bridges across the country. An estimated 78,000 spans are structurally unsound. China agreed today to prohibit the use of lead paint on toys exported to the United States. Chinese officials also pledged to step up inspections and meet U.S. standards. Turkish police on alert because of the 9/11 anniversary discovered a large bomb in a parking lot in Ankara that could have been devastating had it detonated. Thousands were evacuated after sniffer dogs detected the explosives. In Islamabad, Pakistan's Supreme Court today was asked to intervene in yesterday's deportation of former Pakistan Premier Nawaz Sharif. President Pervez Musharraf arrested Sharif as soon as he arrived in Pakistan after 8 years of exile. Sharif announced his candidacy in the up-and-coming Pakistani presidential